we'll start 5 o'clock. The record, all present accounted for, other than Pezzi. Hopefully, he'll show up because we haven't heard anything. So, Mr. Treasurer, it's your show.
Oh, I answer to anything. Hello.
You shouldn't have told us that.
Yeah. I'm passing around an update. Kill the tree. We killed about 27 trees with this report, but it's a renewable resource. Provides jobs in the forest. Tonight we'll focus on more detail in the general fund, and if we have time later on, we'll look at some the Finance Committee Chair asked us the staff to look at what options are available in terms of revenue enhancement. So we have a couple decision cards, if we get to it, that y'all can consider. I know timing is not great, but it was asked, so don't kill the messenger. Anyway, have some suggested things the council could do in the future to enhance revenue, especially for the street fund. But let's go and jump to page 4, and these will be on the website. I just kind of think they evolve almost every day, so we'll put them on the website tomorrow, Sam. Page 4 is the general fund. I have highlighted in a column the 2012 year. That's our challenge, 2012. And if you look down toward the bottom of that column outlined, we're $24,462 surplus in this draft general fund. We've done a few things since we last talked. Took a hard look at how the public works staff, the staff in the field, spread their time. We looked back the last 12 months and took a look at that and tweaked it a little bit and then used that for the 2012 forecast. You know, many employees are just stuck at one or two funds all the time. The water sewer plant operators, they're split 50-50, water sewer. Police, for example, they're all general fund all the time. But we do have public works folks that spread their time among water, sewer, storm, street, and equipment. So this is an estimate for 2012 for the charges in the general fund. Yes?
So if I'm hearing you, we've applied some of those expenses to those designated areas a little bit more than we had in the past?
No, every year we look at the last 12 months' actual spending, actual hour distribution per their time cards. And it'll vary from year to year, depending on how much work is on our buildings, for example, City Hall and other buildings, or how much the water fund is getting hit for maintenance on lines. More breaks one year versus another.
So was the result that we were able to move some out of general fund expenses to...
Correct, from the last time you saw this. That helped the general fund, I think, is a reasonable amount to put in there for building maintenance. We're underrunning it this year, underrunning the budget through September, so it makes sense to keep that about the same for 2012 for building maintenance labor. Mark, so that helped.
What is encompassed by general building maintenance? Is that utilities, or just painting the place, or
repair and maintenance on this building, City Hall?
All facilities.
General maintenance on all of our city buildings, we used to spend some money on the library if we had to replace a furnace, for example, but normally the library's on their own deal. They pay their own utilities. So it's maintenance work on buildings, minor. You might pull out a door. You might fill in a wall. Sure. We have a pretty talented crew, but there hasn't been much of that this year.
Of that 78, how much do you think would go to outside contractors, and how much would go back to pay salaries of our in-house talent?
It's mostly in-house labor. We pay for the elevator maintenance out of that department and fund.
So is the percentage you made 75% in-house?
It's probably more like 50 to 60% in-house, because we have fairly substantial. We have building rent in there. Well, the police have building rent, but
no, that's not it's, next year, so is it?
Well, we intend to move in budget-wise toward the second half of next year. We're still paying rent for their current location. But so, and looking at other little tweaks, we tweaked revenues very, very slightly in the previous page. But and there's still a chance we could tweak revenues depending on the next month or so of revenue. I'll know next week what our sales tax is, and others comes in about the 23rd of the month. So before we leave it, each one of these numbers for each of these departments, a lot of these are heavily salaries and benefits and payroll taxes. And I have some more handouts that kind of give you more detail of what goes into these expenditure numbers. But before I do, there's a question. Brent?
Yeah, under the detention?
Yeah.
Was that just a percentage increase?
Yeah, where'd you get that extra?
$20,000.
$24,000.
Yeah. Are we planning on arresting more people?
Look at the current employee. We only have one employee in detention. That employee with that union has a contract through 2012, so 3.5% wage increase. Medical benefits are up 11%, for example. And just kind of looking at our current budget for the jail and the jail credits, there's no real big increase there. It's so hard to predict. We get billed when miscreants leave the jail. So if they're in there for 6 months, I don't know if that's a typical sentence, but these are all misdemeanors. But we don't get billed until they leave the jail. So it's hard to say how we'll actually come in next year. We're looking pretty good this year, but it's hard to predict.
Mark, you say there's a detention employee. Who is that?
That's our probation officer.
Probation?
His name is Todd Anderson. I think that's
not
public knowledge.
How come that's not under, up above, under total law enforcement? How come that's not part of that?
Yeah, the BARS accounting manual calls out specific charge codes and numbers, and detention is definitely separate from law enforcement. So we just have to follow that accounting policy.
We can't break out the person versus the jail?
Well, let's kind of get into that. I've got a handout that breaks out salaries, and so let's take a peek at that.
And the jail credits, Mark, that's as of this month? Or is that anticipated as of December?
We get paid monthly, so-called. We get the jail bill monthly, and then it has this credit. That's because the city paid them a bunch of money a few years ago. We kind of bought into that temporary jail.
Right.
So the deal is if you paid in, we'll get these credits. I think it's 5 years.
It's like a timeshare, huh?
you know, timeshare sell.
If you pass these down, we'll look at some.
A lot of these departments are primarily, the great majority is
salaries, benefits, and payroll taxes. I'll let that get around.
What's Todd's last name? And Anderson.
Yeah, from an accounting standpoint, the state requires that we record those expenditures under detention rather than law enforcement.
This handout.
I can see that being under detention stuff. I just wondered why we didn't break out the person versus the jail costs.
So sure. There is a breakout. In the handout I just did, this is all of our employees projected for 2012. And let me see. Let's find our probation officer here. He's on the top of page 2, row number 110, if you can find that on the left side. This shows all these pages. This shows the anticipated salary at the end of this year and the anticipated salary at the beginning of next year. Now, you can see on row 110, Todd Anderson, that's a far right-hand column is the salary change, 3.5%. That's per contract. So I'll hand out another sheet that shows everybody's medical insurance and retirement and Social Security and L&I and all that stuff. But if you look at page 1, we list all employees here. And in this draft budget shows the percentage increases on the right-hand side that's embedded in these numbers. Now, some of these, we've got union contracts that are yet to be negotiated. We've got the machinists that are yet to be negotiated. This is our management position that we go 0% like the police guild took. And so, yeah, page 2 in the police guild, a bunch of zeros there in the right-hand column. That's what we've negotiated. So I'm going to hand out another sheet that shows these same employees, but with more detail. My point is not to quiz you, but it's here. I can certainly send this email. Well, this didn't really work. Staples really didn't work. Page 1, 2, and 3. So we're running out of staples. If you don't mind, peeling off page 1, 2, and 3 and pass it down. So 1, 2, and 3, once it gets around there, we'll, you'll see in the right-hand column the total 2012 dollar value for labor benefits and payroll taxes for each of these individuals in the city, as well as council and mayor on the top, page 1. So there's a mountain of numbers. They all consolidate into that one column in that big sheet we first looked at.
The deferred comp, is that reflected in this big sheet?
Yeah, all those numbers in the right-hand column, you know, when you add them all up, they all get translated to actually another spreadsheet that adds the department non-labor costs to it.
Short two sheets.
Should be 1, 2, and 3. Sorry. I should have done quality control. But no way.
You're right.
1, 2, and 3? Okay. It's interesting on page 3, the grand totals at the bottom of page 3, just looking back a year ago, we're down on salaries by 83,000. Now, you know, we've got 1.5 fewer people in the 2012 budget than we did last year. One police officer. By the way, it's interesting. We are we're up to 18 police officers right now, and we're looking for 17 next year. So we're kind of hoping somebody does follow through and leaves employment as promised. Anyway, that's the plan. We've got two people that are under consideration for being hired.
So the letting go of BN. Is that what is that reflected in the comment you just made? You said we're down 1.5 person. Is BN a half person? Where'd the half person come from?
Yeah, we're down BN, down a police officer, up a half-time assistant court finance clerk. But there's no overtime for the main court services manager. That's why I get the 1.5. Down one police, down one BN, up a half. It gets you 1.5 net.
Gotcha.
It's kind of misleading up a half because cut out all the overtime for the court services manager.
The does the mayor's salary by ordinance include a cost of living like the council does? It's not listed here, but is it by ordinance?
It does if he accepts it.
He told me he's not going to accept it.
Oh, okay.
I put in 0.
I would think it should be included because we don't know who's going to be the mayor next year. It seemed to me it would be proper for that to be included. I don't think it's actually the mayor's decision. He can turn it down next year, but it seems to me, since it's not a given who the mayor is.
Sure. This is a draft budget. I'm sure you won't pass it until last year. We passed it the first meeting in December. But, you know, certainly subject to change before December. It's not a big ticket item.
I realize that.
Mark?
I think it should be included.
Under your heading, it says there's a medical insurance opt-out, an extra $8,000 that we pay you cash in lieu of benefits?
That's how it works. In the contract you approved, as well as union contracts, employees who have other medical insurance, a spouse, previous employer, as a result of retirement, maybe a Navy coverage like myself, maybe reserves. So it saves the city bucks. This is an incentive for employees to do that. Now, there are a limited number of these opt-outs. When we buy our medical insurance, we have to include the whole census. But medical providers, insurance providers, will recognize that if they get 90% approximately, maybe a little more, of the total population, they still will offer the plan at the rates they offer.
Yeah, I should add, too, just to see if you fully understand the mathematics of the opt-out. If an employee, if their bargaining unit contract allows it, if they opt out for the reasons Mark illuminated, what we do is the employee gets 40% of the premium we no longer have to pay, and the city keeps 60% of the premium we no longer have to pay. So the city comes out ahead, and the employee gets a little bump from it. So it's an inducement for them not to have double coverage that is somewhat duplicitous.
And there's about five employees on the sheet that have a medical opt-out feature.
Good.
So, Mark, is this breakout on the 1, 2, and 3 total here, $3,859,000 for 2012, is that encapsulated somewhere on this six-year plan that shows the 11 and 10? I guess it only has 11 budget somewhere.
Yes, it's encompassed in all those spreadsheets that employees charge to. So the total $3,859,000 is spread among general fund, street fund, right, water, sewer, storm equipment.
So it's not a line item. One line item here, just it's spread throughout the various places that they work.
Where they charge their time. Right. And I can certainly send out tomorrow. That's another spreadsheet that shows all that labor and benefits by fund. Oh, and it also includes all the non-labor costs, utilities, office supplies, blah, blah, blah. No one there. Didn't want to overwhelm you with paper. Speaking of, put that on the website, too.
Now, actually, when you think about it, it's the $3,859,000 is not what's spread amongst all the funds. It's actually the $5,545,000.
Yeah, there we go. Total employee costs.
Right. That's the total payroll costs, and those are spread amongst all the funds, depending on where either if a person works in just one fund, but if they're spread amongst six funds, it'd go to those various funds.
Yeah, salary and all the different kind of insurance, medical, dental, vision, life, retirement, L&I, Social Security, clothing allowance for selected employees. So that's kind of some more detail behind that long sheet. So right now, draft budget is we're ahead $24,462.
Yeah, and the comment Mark made about the police department, right now we are fully staffed with 18 officers. We have two conditional offers out there for two new officers. They both need to go through the academy. But assuming that they do go through the academy and make it through, then we would be at 18. And as you've heard before, we do anticipate one, possibly two officers leaving next year, one being hired by another agency and one actually changing his career and moving overseas. So should both of those leave next year, we would only be replacing one of the two. Naturally, if only one leaves, then we're right where we need to be.
So when you say 18, that 18 includes the two in the academy right now?
It includes the two that are anticipated.
Two that are anticipated. I think they hope they weren't able to get into the October academy, and they believe that they'll get into the November academy. And that's, again, how many weeks, 8 weeks or something like that.
It looks like a pretty sure thing. We're buying uniforms. So.
Yeah.
So that's good. They filled the two positions. Surprising, but. I felt them. So that's good. Let's touch on some of the other funds briefly, and then we'll come back to potential revenue enhancements. Jump to the street fund, which is our kind of another problematic page 9. Again, we're just kind of hanging on there with the $41,000 projected cash balance at the bottom of the page there for 2012. On the bottom part of the page, expenditures, you can see there's no capital expenditures planned. It's just recurring costs. Very similar to my estimate for 2011, $815,000. And again, on the top side, the solid waste tax is the primary funder of this activity. We get a smaller amount from gasoline tax, $245,000 is my estimate. A little bit from encroachment permits. It's just pretty tight when looking at the cash balance, especially 2013. It's really tight. Page 10, the park mitigation funds. Again, just really quickly, we have debt service on two major parks here, debt service every year, 20-year deal. So there's nothing else in there as far as expenditures except paying that debt service. Page 11 is the traffic mitigation fund. We use this for road projects.
Our parks worker doesn't come out of this?
Say what?
Capital and personnel.
Oh. Yeah, Parks workers funded partially from solid waste and partially from property taxes, sales taxes, utility taxes.
Yeah, the parks workers in the general fund.
Yes, two of them dedicated.
The categories of the general fund is parks.
Yeah, two of them dedicated, and plus a little bit of other labor from individuals in the public works. So.
And almost everyone here knows this, but I guess for those who don't, the complexity of our budget insofar as what's charged where is again a direct. Result of what Mark refers to as the BARS manual, which is the budgeting, accounting, and reporting systems. It's what the state auditor puts out. It's a big three-ring binder. And, of course, anything that good has to be very complicated. And so they promulgate, so there's direct comparisons from one city to the next where certain expenditures are required to be recognized. Example would be the parks. Every city you go to, the Parks Department will be in the general fund under the parks. In fact, even under the same number under the Parks Department. Everything's all very, very regulated that way.
Page 11, traffic mitigation. Again, the expenditures are for road projects. We do have we are paying back a pre-construction loan for Church Road, a 1% interest loan to Public Works Trust Fund. So we make those payments this year, next, and 2013, and we paid that off. Other expenditures are going for the Main Street through 2013. Now, 2012, we anticipate finishing the project, but we've got some interfund loans that need to be paid back planning-wise in 2013. That's why we have some monies here for 2013 Main Street. Cover that. Criminal justice, page 12 and page 13. Those funds are rather steady, predictable. They're used for police operations, transferred to the general fund. Page 14 is REIT 1. REIT 1 can be used for capital facilities on the capital facilities plan. We do have debt service on the City Hall long-term LTGO, long-term general obligation bond that last payments in 2013. And then we have debt service on the Pioneer Pavilion and police and library general obligation bonds. Down below, we have 2011 police general obligation bond debt service and an anticipated 2012 library bonds. And even if we don't go out in 2012, the pledge here is to make debt service sinking fund payments.
Yeah, now that 2012 library GO bonds represents the amount of money we've already, that million, a little over $1,050,000, that we've already committed to the library at some point in the future. So I don't want you to think that we're talking about either filling the budget, the gap that currently exists, or we're talking about going out in 2012 with those bonds. But should we decide to do that, the debt service is laid in there.
All A question. Did the library come up with the other half of the money for that extension?
Yeah, a little twist on that. They did approve it and the concept of it, but they like to operate on a reimbursement basis. So as we continue to pay SHKS and 2020 engineering and incur expenses within the city for issuance of the permit and the EGLE compliance, once we pay all those bills, then we can ship off that report to the foundation, and they're going to kick us back half. It'll probably be, and right now what's unknown is the permit issuance costs. We're charging our staff time as we do on all of our projects, and for that matter even to outside folks. So once that number is firmed up, it could be, the last meeting we talked about that it was about $65,000. It could be a little bit north of that, but whatever it is, the foundation has said that they will pay half of what that extra amount is. But we're going to have to pay it up front and then get it reimbursed.
Page 15 is REIT 2. REIT 2 is used for road projects, and I guess it can be used for maintenance as well. REIT, is it REIT or is it traffic mitigation? I forgot. Anyway, recent change.
Yeah,
doesn't matter.
I think it's
REIT. We need to spend it on capital. So you have an ongoing debt service on the streetlights that does end in 2015. This is the old streetlights and the bridge to Third. And we see some money transferred in 2012 to the Main Street project to finish that up. Hotel Motel, I showed it, but there's nothing in 2012. Now we're getting close, I think, to getting some grants considered. If we get that number, we'll throw it in here before we do the ordinance in December. I didn't copy all these debt service funds. It's just kind of boring. Same numbers as last time. Didn't copy the two construction projects, Main Street and Church Road. Same numbers as last time. I updated the water, sewer, and storm for department head inputs. Storm is tight, as I've been saying. Page 31 on storm, excluding the construction of the pond. So page 13 is just the storm fund. Shows a predicted balance of $13,000 at the end of 2012. So it's very tight. And really, most of the capital there is the Main Street storm portion of Main Street, 422. We're going to update that number a little bit higher. But go ahead. Yep.
Mark, whenever we do any work on the dike and regarding flooding of the river, where does that come from? And is it under capital or is it under maintenance or what?
Well, I guess it depends on how extensive the repair. If it's a repair, it's repair. We usually cost share if we can and get some funding out of the, I don't know, the Army Corps or somebody.
Yeah. Is there, that's what it's kind of getting
right,
at.
And then the recent, all the work that was done last year, that was considered maintenance.
Oh, it's maintenance? Okay.
Yeah, and then the Corps covered some of that cost and then also the PUD. They contribute to that.
PUD? Okay. Now, did we have the, because that was pretty spendy. I never saw the, I don't recall seeing the whole tab for that. That extension of the Riverwalk, kind of basically the diking system.
What was kind of replaced and what was there?
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what was our contribution?
You know, I'd have to look that up. Yeah, I don't have the information just on top.
Okay.
I'd have to look
and
that.
If we did, that would come out of kind of this area we're talking about now, storm
well,
and storm.
Well, the work that they did there was just restoring the existing levee, what was there. So that's considered maintenance.
Oh, that was maybe they all picked all of it up?
No, we still had to cover a certain percent.
Okay.
And so our percent, we covered under maintenance.
Okay. And so it did come out of this area.
It'd be the storm fund maintenance, yeah.
Yeah.
Page 32 is, go ahead.
Question, yep. Where's the new pond?
Page 32 is the new pond.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, thank you.
That's the little thing.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, the capital
Mark, can I go back to storm
a separate fund.
Quick storm question,
yeah.
Since you've turned the page.
Sure.
The revenues for the storm, is most of that from that increase of the fees on the water sewer? Or how much of that $700,000 is from about? Is all of that from that? We added the $10, $11 a month.
Page 32 shows we get $2 a month. We're going to grab $2 a month from total storm revenues and put it against this fund 412 to pay debt service.
Yeah, we went from 10 to 12. The $10, yeah. If you look on page 31 at the very, very top, you see $10 right above the 2012.
Well, thank you.
That's the $10, and then on page 32, you can see the $2, and then an escalation for cost of living increase.
Which equates to 147.
So that's where the other $2 went, was into the construction fund.
Thank you.
And does it break out the actual loan, the debt service on this project here?
It does. If you look, I don't have these rows numbered, sorry, but in 2013 we started at $176,600 annual debt service.
Right about the middle.
We're on page 32.
Yeah. It starts in 2013 and goes all the way out.
$176,600. It's continuous for.
It assumes $2.2 million at 5% 20 years. We'll probably do better than 5% interest, but a little conservative here.
So that's principal and.
And interest.
Yeah, BP and I.
So.
Yep.
Assuming the 5% interest.
And we may ask for a little back loading. So the front end is a little lower. First couple of years, we can ask for that.
Give us some time.
Yeah, backloading versus front loading.
So where do we stand on that project? Are we getting ready to go for construction on that next year?
Yeah, we have design work underway and permitting, and then we need to negotiate with some property owners on the easement. So the work is underway, and we're scheduled to go to bid. I think we're going to probably bid both Main Street and the pond as one bid package. And so we're looking at 1st of April.
In fact, on page 32 still.
The same contract?
Yeah, so we're kind of there. Closing costs. That's the deal.
You'll see some of that spending that we planned for 2012 for the regional pond phasing into the fourth quarter of this year for the design and the right-of-way and reducing that amount for 2012. Now, we'll be proposing that to you the next budget update in November. The reason that works is we do have some cash sitting there, $100,000, in this fund, which was an interfund loan from the general fund. But we've got to do the right-of-way. You've got to do the engineering before you build the pond and bid it.
Property lines and how much stuff we need, and the council kind of, as I recall, was a little shocked by some of that, asked them to go back and shore some of that up and bring it back.
Okay, yeah, we talked about it a couple times in committee, but we can provide an update here to the full council.
I don't want to get into it now.
We have project updates tonight, so it'd be 2 weeks. We can provide a church road update.
That's all the highlights I had on the big sheets. If we have time, I'd like to pass out, as requested, just some ideas from staff, some options in terms of revenue. Again, don't shoot the messenger, please.
Well, why don't we note that it's your job to present all options. Mark, while this is going around, I have one question on the first sheet you've handed out. Yeah. One of two, the double-sided one.
Yep.
I think I know the answer. I just wanted to reconfirm my answer. Our city clerk salary going up 23%. That was part of the original contract you got signed on. That's nothing.
Who should answer that besides me?
Yeah, It actually is something that's new insofar as all of it. I should say it was part of the original package insofar as when we hired Sam, it was acknowledged that we were going to be getting the clerk treasurer for much less than what we've been paying Linda under the idea that after the first year there would be an increase. So the contract that Sam, as well as all the other non-represented under, runs through December 31st. So we're going to be bringing to you here relatively soon new contracts for 2012. And the dollar amount that's reflected in there is the acknowledgement of the increase after the first year.
That contract will come to it for this.
Yes, absolutely.
It's kind of odd. It's weird where you're at this in the budget.
Yeah.
And several of these employees.
Well, fair projection, you know, what's the time?
Yeah, we wanted
I looked at that and said, you know, when Sam came on board, he came on board, Linda was still on until the end of March.
Yeah.
So Sam came on board and essentially covered Linda's job for the first 3 months. And
I'm not
12 months worth of work for 9 months worth of.
No, I'm just concerned about. I'll be unbelievably blunt and honest. That there are some zeros on here. I'm more concerned about the zeros shown on here we start negotiation Wednesday.
Did everyone get this handout?
That's odd to me.
Harvey Tax, page 1, page 2, right?
No.
Two sided.
No. This is the budget revenue.
Page 1.
Cut.
Page 1 just shows options on property tax. Page 2 is attached there.
Oh, yeah, they're double-sided.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
This one. Okay.
So page 1 is just general property tax. It has been 2 years, I verified, when we went zero. 1% increase gets you about $20,000. There's 0% in the budget right now, in the draft budget. General fund, 0% increase. I am planning on recognizing $20,000 of new construction / annexation. I may be low on that. It may come in higher. Our residential's been pretty strong. Got the Grandview annexation, the West Slater annexation kicking in. So, and we also, you know, we have $96,000 of bank capacity. If you so chose, you could raise people's property taxes. That about, we save that much in reserve, if you will. Page 2 has requested some ideas from staff. What would be available? I just kind of threw this together last week. Gambling tax. We used to have gambling tax in the city. It brought in a tiny amount of money. We got rid of that several years ago.
Oh, the one done for the bingo parlor?
No, it was all.
It was punch, pull tabs.
That one did really well.
Oh.
It used to be a sizable number before the casino really opened up and started going strong.
And why was it was part of the city revenue was removed? And some people might remember. I don't.
That was under your term, Mill, and it what
was
happened
a lot of years
the
ago.
Casino did open. And
the gambling tax had been taken away prior to.
Okay.
And the rationale at that point was that first of all, the nonprofits. Who were also running full tabs. The original thinking was they're nonprofits. They're crisis clinic. They were band boosters.
Yeah.
They were other entities on the bingo halls. Let's do away with the gambling tax on the bingo halls, on bingo and on the full tabs. The bingo hall itself, the nonprofit. But it turned out it was such a small amount left, and the tavern owners were screaming they weren't able to make any money.
That's
on,
right.
It almost came down to it's almost as expensive to collect it as what we're asking to collect because of all of the audit requirements that are required to do that. The state law required that you hire gambling enforcement officers. That's by state law. And that's still the case.
Yes.
Even if you were to collect this $2,000, you would have to designate that as gambling enforcement. You would have to assign a police officer. And the interesting thing, I was breaking the middles at back then, two or three of the entities testified to the council, but they'd never seen a police officer and do any enforcement of gambling regulation in 5 years.
Yeah. They might have driven by.
An item at one point. City's budget that hired a gambling police officer. never did any enforcement.
Yeah,
so
it just kind of went away.
One of those, finally, the council just said,
But you're saying it would cost us more to have this tax?
I'm not saying it would cost more, but if you put that tax in, you certainly are not going to get it done covered at zero cost.
You're not going to pay for that $2,000.
I would say, if you look, I mean, in terms of, you know, because it's pull tab now. We have no bingo. We have no other establishments. Well, I bet you it's really small.
Yeah.
I know because Outlaws does it. So you basically have Main Street and Babes. Lloyd doesn't have one.
Babes doesn't
have
one.
Okay, so Bowling Alley.
Main Street.
Bowling Alley. Main Street and Bowling Alley. Yeah, well, that's pretty small.
The restaurant's too full. I don't know what they do. She did.
El Nopal.
Yeah. She did have pull tabs when she was in there. I'm suspicious that they do. There may be a maximum maybe three or four.
But the basic fact is that market is
really slim.
Yeah, I put $2,000. That's probably high.
Yeah.
Next time, utility tax, water, sewer, storm customers, currently it's at 6.5%. That obviously goes on water bills if you were to increase that. 1%, one percentage point increase would bring in about $35,000 to the general fund.
We added a half last.
We did, for 2011. We did add the half. And part of that rationale was the fire hydrant maintenance and replacement had to be charged to the general fund, not utilities. So we have a line item set up to collect that labor and parts for fire hydrants, and it ends up in the general fund. $20 car tab tax, my estimate is there's 8,000 cars in the city burned down. That's $160,000 going to the street fund.
That's a lot of money. How many cities do that?
Lots of
them. Well, City of Seattle does. King County does. locally around here, I'd have to research. I don't know the answer. I don't think any locals do. But
well, Bellingham passed their PIP tax.
So it's sales tax.
TBA tax, whatever it's called.
Oh, yeah.
Sales tax.
Transportation Improvement District?
Yeah.
85 to 87?
What's up?
Yeah, 85 to 87.
Yeah, in lieu of this. They talked about doing it either way.
Yeah.
Did it pass strongly, do you recall?
Who?
Did it pass pretty handily, do you recall?
Mm-hmm. That's Bellingham, yeah.
That was a self-imposed vote.
Remember, the emotional incentive for passing that was Sunday service at WPA.
Oh, yeah.
And that has been reestablished.
Yep. Penny gas tax, we did, for the large gas retailers, we did confirm through municipal research, the lawyers there said, yes, if you so desired, you could pass that local ordinance, exclude the first X number of gallons per month from this penny, maybe 50,000 gallons a month, so nobody, no little guys would have to pay anything. A big one, big retailer would.
There's no reason to do that now without any big retailers here.
Well, come in and invest in.
The center price is pretty
hard
big.
For us to make it retroactive.
No.
It'd be
if there were a Costco that came in with 50 pumps, you could very quickly enact that tax, but it's still going to take a load of the people.
No. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. The $20 car tab is no vote, but the penny gas tax is a vote.
Does it have to be $20 car tab?
No. It can be any amount up to $20.
But the first 20 is not voter approved, right?
So there's a voter approved up to 100 as well.
Oh, there is? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we can do, isn't it true, the Transportation Improvement District, we can do the 20 without a vote?
Yes.
That's why I put down 20. Solid waste utility tax. Here's our golden goose. 12% next year. It's on the books. 12% of gross on those two transfer stations on Slater Road. Just saying. Another 0.5%, bring in $50,000. Number six, double the business license fees, $50,000. Seven, B&O tax, same rules as Bellingham. Or number eight, B&O headcount tax. City of Redmond does this because Microsoft is there, and they pay property tax. That's about all they pay. So you could do it businesses without retail sales, for example. You could craft that way. So banks, Border Patrol just moved in. Pay property tax. Ooh, the feds pay property tax. Okay, then we get nothing.
I understand. What do you mean the B&O headcount mean?
$50 a year for each employee you got.
Employee tax.
Yeah. I think it's a B&O tax. Say what?
Verdell Grain would have to pay that one.
I'm saying you ought to exclude those without any without retail sales. We don't get any retail sales in Fernandina Green. Banks, credit unions.
Exclude.
Yeah. Any business that gives us retail sales tax, they would not be. They are excluded.
Oh, you'd only charge a head tax for
banks. The credit unions.
Okay. You had to explain
that. You get something from. We provide police, we provide fire, we provide nice road maintenance, traffic lights. Only thing that pays property tax, except for the feds. In fact, the feds probably wouldn't pay this either. So it's just a thought. Other cities do it. At least Redmond does it.
Steve, call me tomorrow and say, you guys would agree with this, wouldn't you?
At least the feds are paying their water bill.
On the invoice, they probably would have noticed. Don't write that.
This is $50 a head. It only brings in $10,000.
Until some odd.
Pretty conservative number. It's a pretty conservative number.
And what is that per head? How did you get that $10,000?
It was actually $50. So is what? What is that?
50 officers. Or 50 agents.
You have.
Okay, we got a whole bunch of conversations going. Let's.
Mark, you have.
Lloyd has the floor.
Mark, you have some kind of estimate on how many heads we have to count?
Yeah, sure. Let's say yes, he does. $10,000. It could be any number. Reasonable number.
Well, I'm saying you're
did you like 50? Did you like 25? We can get this passed. I'm just thinking about the banks, the credit unions, insurance.
One voice at a time.
You could exempt the first five employees and say you don't have to pay anything. I mean, you could craft it. Mm-hmm. But banks, credit unions, they don't get nothing.
But your $10,000 is a $50 a head. That's how you get the money.
Let's say it is.
Okay, we'll say it is.
I don't know how many businesses.
Let's help them out. Let's do hands now, and we'll call on people. Help the person hands them.
Yeah, I think it would be fair, especially if people are going to consider this, that you do exempt a small number, because we have other businesses in town that don't have retail sales. You know,
Manufacturing. Lawyer's office. Manufacturing. Doctor's office.
I don't think we pay sales tax on dental work.
No.
Doctors work?
No. That's professional.
So if you were to exempt the first five, you essentially take care of all the small mom and pop businesses. The rest of them are probably multinationals, most of them.
Yeah. You know, Samson Rope. I think there's a sliver of retail sales, and that's probably just a mistake. But those big wholesale, the manufacturers, it's just an idea. They enjoy the city services.
Yeah, we probably exempt like school districts.
Yeah,
for governmental services.
Maybe federal, exempt the federal guy. We'll collect it anyway.
No, it's wholesale.
It's all food items.
Like I said, manufacturing. Mm-hmm. It's just they need a cop. They call 911. We come. They need fire district, fire engine. It comes.
It would. It would be interesting to take a look at that Redmond.
Yeah.
How they.
If you request it, Councilmember Zimmerman, I will look it up.
I will request that.
And you request the head count tax. Okay. You sure you want to get? Okay.
For information.
Before I go to John, I guess I want to jump in my opinion. I mean, none of these would be looked upon favorably in this economy. I mean, it's a tough economy. My personal opinion is that if you had a specific project that people could point to, and that Mel talks about why something passed with the 60% plus, I thought it was 62, but I could be wrong. And I believe that passed in Bellingham where they increased their sales tax because they had a specific purpose.
Yeah.
We're going to put money into these roads. They listed the roads, and then they were going to keep the Sunday bus service. And so that was something a voter could look at and say, yes, I want Sunday bus service, and I really do want to improve these roads. And so, I think you kind of roll into that where voters are frustrated of, well, you're going to increase my fees. What are you going to do with that? Or it's going to go to the general fund where nobody knows where it goes. So I'll go back. John was first, then I'll go to Paul, and then to Lloyd, and then to Steve.
Yeah, I'm sure most council, not many states have a B&O tax. I think it's like three. It's not very B&O tax.
States, you say?
States. There aren't many states that have B&O
taxes
because they use income taxes instead. which is basically, I always sort of thought of B&O tax as kind of a bastard income tax.
Tax on gross revenue.
Yeah, it's on gross, not on net, but it's kind of how you do it.
Yeah.
Having said that, I mean, I'm always in favor of user's fee. You use the roads, it means you're using a car. Any way you could tie it close to a car, which would be number three or number four, I would be interested in, and a council discussion sometimes on those matters.
Councilperson Ingram?
Well, if I remember correctly, when we were talking about the car tab issue at AWC a couple of years back, you have to declare a transportation improvement district.
Yes.
Before you can do that. And that transportation improvement district has to specify precisely what that car tab is going to be used for.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just put it into a pot and say, we'll use it where we want it. You have to tell the public it's going to be used on Church Road or on Thornton Road. It has to be specific.
Yeah, well, not. You can be like Bellingham. Bellingham had a listing of their projects, and they didn't say specifically which portion would go. But you're fairly correct, is they had to do a listing of the projects that would be used for that.
Right, and then once those projects are done, that tax goes away.
But it's a year. It's not when all projects are done, I believe. It's 10 years.
I believe the way it works is with the sunset clause, they put more projects in that than they could possibly find.
Oh, sure.
Therefore, the sunset clause will occur prior to doing all of their projects.
Yeah, and you form a transportation benefit district board, and that board is the council.
It doesn't have to be,
but many times that's what you do.
Okay, so we got two more, and then we'll take a break. So, Councilor Zimmerman,
we can bring you some more information.
Personnel has
actually, you guys answered my question about the sunset clause.
Okay, Councilor Malpezzi.
Two things, Mark. Is this either on the website or?
Will be tomorrow.
Will be tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay.
All the pages. I'll also put the other handouts on the website, and I'll put this
giant detail one on the website as well. Second thing, this is great, some revenue decision cards. Is it possible, there's always two sides to a budget, is it possible to get some cut decision cards?
I haven't seen any cuts. I do have a few add-ons on the expense side I wanted to share with you. I didn't make copies, but they're fairly minor. The police wants $1,000 for vests. They have a shelf life. A radar trailer. Almost $6,000, and a bike patrol program, $8,000 the first year.
I was going more with, and I'm not, necessarily proposing any of these, but if we were to have to lay off one employee, what would that be?
Yeah, we didn't bother with the decision cards for laying off our current, we're down, one and a half for next year, down a development engineer, down a police officer, up a half-time assistant court clerk. We decide that internally as a management team, as the administration. But decision cards available. I can get you the form. Haven't seen any others from staff.
Mark, that was my request for the budget enhancement. I thank you for all that work on that. I appreciate those options.
Actually, I did receive, it wasn't a decision card, but I did receive... we've been talking about our EOC, our Emergency Operations Center, and the need to put together an all-hazard mitigation plan for the city. And we actually had some people in who were talking about that. Mike Chaplin, who is, of course, as you were aware, our communications officer, has done a lot of work on this. He has actually put together a one-page proposal to put together a hazard plan, and I believe his quote was $5,000. But it wasn't on a decision card. It isn't anything that we have money laying around for. But it was something that just came across.
So transfer that to cards so we can have that, because, we're going to rehash that. We should have those by next time. So a little bit more than a five-minute break. We'll convene at 6 o'clock.
welcome. How are you?
I thought I'd get here on time.
Well, it isn't usual because Ferndale does start early, and that's okay.
Good job.
Because, you know, we like,
I have something for you. This is your coffee, John. Last year, this property tax thing, this is a year old. So we showed a 0% increase last year. If we had voted at 1%, it would have been 101, but it wasn't.
Okay, husband,
they give more money for the infrastructure.
Greg, this is what I'm talking about.
Okay. Here
is our, we kept it the same.
Right.
But we're receiving more money from new the construction. New construction.
It's a new construction, right. New construction is added on.
We don't have to vote that in. No. To ask for it. It's a done deal. Yeah.
We have no idea how much it's going to be.
True. I understand. We don't know.
But we know it's whatever the new tax valuation is and new construction times last.
Was I misunderstanding what you were telling me today, or was I asking the wrong question?
Probably both. Well, I wasn't explaining it very clearly.
They apply the prior year's levy rate to get that $39,000. And then it becomes your new baseline, 207.8.
The second year, it's rolled into our new baseline.
Goes from 203.5.
Oh, yeah. It's part of that.
207.8. The assessed value grows.
So next
the mill rate stays
the same. 100%.
So the 1% would be this, but then next year the 1% is based on this number.
Exactly.
You added,
it just rolls
so
up that way.
So new construction, generally you get the bang for the new construction separately, but then it adds to your base.
Yeah.
And so the 1% for the next year is also
picked. See, we didn't get any annexation last year, but we're going to get some this year.
The appetizer.
So, but there's no scenario in which annexation or new construction would lower anybody's property taxes.
Would you go to a restaurant?
Those two events by themselves don't lower anybody's
taxes. Well, if the new construction was so big or the annexation so large that, you know, let's say that the number was added was a million instead of 39,000.
10%.
Some huge. So let's say, so we went from 2 million to 3 million.
Okay.
Now, if we want to have $3 million next year, that's going to be spread out amongst all the existing property owners and the new construction folks in the second year.
Mill rate shouldn't change.
So the rate would go down because we wouldn't have to
play. But for that 1 year, but the next year, it would be considered part of the base if we took it.
If it was big enough, it could cut someone's property taxes, but it probably would be, again, very small.
Yeah, but the bottom line is new construction and those revenues go to the city next year, and they add to the base. That's
right.
The base before our 1%.
Right.
And think about it. We're supposed to provide more services. That
of course.
Vacant land now has a house on it. That annexation. Oh, my God. The police can want to hire another officer to patrol that new area.
But that pulls my protocol in the way that I was going to say, well, we're going to go down because we're going to have to stretch out. It doesn't really happen very much.
It's negligible.
We have to find a way to raise it, but not say I raise it.
It's tough. Our medical insurance went up $70,000 in the general fund. And $70,000, that's 3.5%.
Your $200,000 revenue on the 1 cent aspect, that's assuming one big box store and
Okay, you got 1 minute. 1 minute. 1 minute to show time. Pressure's on.
The website. For Wendy and Ryan and Anna and the two lieutenants, put over here to be determined.
Not because we have our position. This will be giving away our position.
And this is
half a minute. So kind of like to start on time. Okay. Don't like people standing up all over the place.
Right, but for those, just put TBD.
Yeah,
to be determined or used.
In
negotiation. If someone asks you to say, well,
you guys got to be ready.
Yeah,
We'll do the pledge while you're
doing this. I didn't have time to get a coat.
So that is
I couldn't do it.
Mike calling me to order. I'll please rise.
If you want to.
And join me in this flip to our flag. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. Our clerk will now go to his regular chair and do our roll call.
Councilmember Malpezzi.
Here.
Councilmember Hansen.
Here.
Councilmember Ingram.
Here.
Councilmember Mushler.
Here.
Councilmember Zimmer.
Here.
Councilmember Goodrich.
Here. Okay, all present. Good job, Council. Okay, next up is our public comment period. This is the period where anyone from the audience can come forward and speak to the Council on anything that's not on tonight's agenda, or high school students can just tell us what the rule is all about.
Extra credit.
Okay, Manuel gets extra credit. Welcome, sir.
Manuel Retta, 2064 Main Street, Vernon, Washington. I have two things to bring up before you. For next month, first of all, I'd like to ask you, has anybody seen the Veterans Museum type thing at Jern's Funeral Home in Bellingham? You should. Okay? We're trying to put together a rally that will start here in front of Avis or Chihuahuas on Veterans Day, go through part of Lummi into Bellingham, and we'll end up over at Jern's Funeral Home. At that point there, everybody has an idea what they have intact there. They got a lot of veterans' items there from World War One and to the wars we have right now. So it'd be something for everybody to, it's a good spot to look at. My other thing that I'd like to bring up before the council is I would like to see to be able to use a little pizza place or whatever it is down there next to City Hall. And that would be basically for more or less part-time. I'm trying to get from also, you should know by now that I'm the Hispanic commissioner. I cover three counties plus above the state. So I would like to do some work at that spot along with the chamber, some meetings, and I also have been talking to the Mexican consul down in Seattle, and which possibly they would come down here to Ferndale, and that would increase a little bit of flow, or as far as use for information to help in the community. I think that's about all that I have for today. Any questions?
No. Thank you. Okay, anyone else to come forward? Okay, enthusiastic. Okay, Council, I'd entertain a motion. Remember your microphone so the crowd can hear you eloquently. To approve the consent agenda. So moved. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, moved and second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Seeing none, motion carries 6-0. Thank you. And now we have a dynamic presentation by a wonderful Whatcom County citizen and representative of our tourism. Welcome to Ferndale.
And her name is?
Lonnie Rahm. Hi there. I'm Lonnie Rahm. I'm the president and CEO of Bellingham Whatcom County Tourism. And in case you weren't aware, you're part of Whatcom County Tourism. The first thing that I do have to say, though, is that I was one of them back in 1974. I know, hard to believe. Yes, I was in high school in 1974. My dad was born in Bellingham, and he moved us back here. So when I go to Pioneer Days, I proudly say, give me the ribbon that indicates how old I am. But it took me 30 years after I left Ferndale. It took me 30 years to figure out a way to come back. And so I'm very delighted to be back in Whatcom County, and I've been here now for 4 years as the head of the Bellingham-Whatcom County Tourism Bureau. I just sat through about half an hour of excruciating budget time. I know this is a very stressful time in all city governments, And so let me just start out by saying I am not here to ask for money. I already get some funding from you. I thank you very much for the support that we get through the lodging tax for the activities that we do as a destination marketing organization. What I'm here to do is just tell you a little bit about what your money is doing. Okay.
Aim it the projector.
I'm trying. Okay. Seriously, my husband does not let me touch these things.
If you want what we sometimes do.
How about if I take
if you tell me to click, then I'll
do that. Now, we have like 9,000 remotes in my house, and I'm just like, I kill everything electronic that I touch. So just out of curiosity, was anybody aware that the visitor industry in Whatcom County is worth $435.5 million in direct visitor spending annually? Annually. And this is down a little bit from the previous year, which was $479 million, because, you know, we're taking a little hit in our industry as well, just like the rest of the communities. But we're taking a less of a hit than some of the other industries. And that's why it's important for us to let people know that even when the economy is rough, people still feel compelled and they feel entitled to travel. It is one of the few rewards that we as Americans in particular just refuse to give up. We may travel a little less, we may travel fewer miles, we may spend a couple of dollars less, but we're still going to spend money. We're still going to reward ourselves. And what we've found is that in 2011, 2010 was kind of, we were down about 7%. Which I know there's a lot of industries that would have been thrilled to death to have only been down 7%. What saved us in Whatcom County, as opposed to some of the other places across the state, was the Canadian traveler. If it were not for the Canadian dollar and the Canadian shopper, we would have been hurting a lot more in our visitor industry than we were. Also, what helped us is the expansion of Bellingham International Airport, the addition of a second Amtrak train, and the addition of a second weekly ferry through the Alaska Marine Highway System. All of these are factors that we have that are unique to us that other communities in Washington State did not have available to them. So $435.5 million, I think it's impressive. And I was sitting at a meeting not long ago, and no disrespect to the agricultural industry because it's a huge part of our tourism product as well, but they were throwing around figures about the value of agriculture in Whatcom County, which I don't think anyone would ever show anything less but accolades for. And the figure that they used was $330 million annually. And I looked at that and went, wow. Wow. How come? I mean, we're like the Rodney Dangerfield of industries. How come we don't get no respect? Thank you. Somebody's listening. Serious, I'm not here to ask for money, so it's okay. We can be lighthearted. Okay, see? I touched it, and now it's broken. I can do it. Okay. The visitor industry also accounts for 6,300-plus local jobs. And in a time where economic development is all about creation of jobs, it's important for us to keep in mind that there are industries that support and generate and create jobs that are a little flying under the radar. It's not like bringing in a new organization, a new company, a new industry, and saying you're going to create 100 jobs. We're already supporting over 6,300 jobs throughout Whatcom County, and that's important. And what we want to also remember is that these are jobs that are often the seasonal jobs that students need, the first-time jobs that expose people to the work ethic, that help them get to the next level of employment. I did a presentation for a statewide association, and there was about 3,000 people in the room, and we were talking about job development, and one of the questions that was asked to me was, isn't this just low wage, minimum wage, part-time jobs, et cetera? And I looked around the room, and I said, how many of you are in the tourism industry? And everybody raised their hand. I said, how many of you work for minimum wage? Not one hand went up. But how many of you started in this industry because there was a job opportunity that fit your schedule, that fit your skill level, and you stayed with the industry because it gave you opportunities to grow, it gave you opportunities to groom yourself and add skills, and how many of you are still in this industry now? And, of course, every hand went up. So it's always important to me to reiterate that, there's a lot of opportunity for entry-level jobs in this industry because of the seasonality, because of the broad diversification of opportunities, But those of us who stay in this industry, and I've been in this particular industry for almost 30 years, and I guarantee you, I do not make minimum wage. I wouldn't take the job if I made minimum wage. See, I'm telling you, every time I touch something, it just is broken. I know. I could just stand up there. I could just do that myself. Okay, hit it again. Because we, like, tried to do some really fancy things and have stuff coming in and out. Good. Also, I'll just come up and touch it if that's okay. My touch apparently doesn't break things as much. Anyway, so also on the same token, it's important for you in your position to understand or to recognize that 7.2 million local taxes are generated specifically through the visitor industry and 25.7 million state taxes. I would be remiss if I did not point out that out of that $25.7 million in state taxes that are generated, not one penny goes to state tourism anymore. We are the only office in the entire country, we're the only state in the entire country that no longer funds a state tourism office at all. So $25.7 million going somewhere else. But the 7.2 is coming back to you, to your community in the form of sales taxes, lodging taxes, all kinds of support. And again, what's always important for me to reiterate is that tourism is an industry that doesn't take, it gives. And whatever is impacted is more than mitigated by the lack of impact. So we do not have to build schools to support the people who come here as visitors. We do not have to build additional infrastructure, police departments, and all of the things that go into a city infrastructure. But the $7.2 million that's coming back into your community is supporting your community. It's supporting parks. It's supporting trails. It's supporting infrastructure that not only is available for the tourist and who brings the tourist and gives them the reason to want to come here, but guess what? I live here, you live here, and I'm taking advantage of those as well. Okay, I'm going to come up here. Is that okay? Now, this is important. This is where you come in, okay? This is an important part of your job, all of you. This is your job now. The $352 per day and the $130 per day, which do you think is more valuable? Come on, you guys have had math class. Which would you rather have? Exactly. You know what the difference is? People that stay in hotels and motels and people who stay with you. Family and friends are an important part of the tourism industry, but they are not as important to us as people who stay in hotels. So invite your friends and family. Refuse to let them sleep on your couch. They're worth a whole lot more to us as a community if you say, come visit me. Here's the number of the local hotel. One of the things that we do on behalf of the destination is we are a destination marketing organization. And I was just doing a quick count while I was listening to that was rough, I know. It was rough. I was listening to the presentation about how to get 10,000 here and 2,000 there. Well, can I just point out that as of January 1st through today, our organization has invited and hosted 94 travel writers in Whatcom County, ranging from the Northwest Outdoor Writers Conference to the Vancouver Sun to a Ski to See media team that we put together that had representatives from Bike Magazine, Powder Magazine, Kayak and Canoe Magazine, Run and Running Magazine. We did a golf media tour in Whatcom County that had 28 golf travel writers, most of whom had never golfed in Whatcom County. We put together we do media tours, and you can see these. You can't probably read them as well as I can because I'm, know what they say. But we do culinary, we do media tours that are groups as well and themes as well as individual tours. And I brought, this is just a little file of a couple of the stories that have resulted from that. Thank you, Gary. You're a gentleman and a scholar.
I see it's not only electronics.
For example, after the golf tournament, the front page cover feature happened to be Homestead Golf in Golf Today Northwest. They have not even paid attention to us as a golf destination. Museums and culture. We've got, I think, it's okay, I'm going to leave this here for you, so you don't have to.
in-flight magazines for Horizon Alaska Air, Kayak Magazine, Out of This World, Rocket Donuts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. These are all stories and accolades. These are things we cannot buy. We do not have the budget to buy this. But we go through and we invite people and we bring them here and we experience it, because the best thing that we can do as a community is bring people to experience it. We can tell them. I can tell you how great Homestead is. I can tell you how great Hovander is. But when you actually go there as a kid and you climb up on those little tractors for the first time, you're done. You're sold. I know, but done. This is a tour itinerary. I apologize, you can't really see it. But when we do our themed media tours, this is what we do with people for a three-day period. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but basically, they arrive one night. We take them around the county for 2 days. They don't have downtime at all. They're doing museums, lunches, dinners, artists, studio tours, et cetera, et cetera. What I wanted to show you as well is that this is the actual driving tour for one of our tours. So the first stop was in Bellingham, dropped down to Larrabee, back up into North Bellingham, out into the county. We're in Ferndale. We're out into the more of the North County. One of the things that we do as a destination marketing organization is we move people around. We recognize that Bellingham is the first thing people think of. That's the top of mind awareness. That's like selling the Space Needle in Seattle. It is part of our iconic image. But our job is to move them around, because the more we expose them to the rest of the area, the more often they're going to come back. If you've not had a chance to visit Bellingham, Whatcom County's website, bellingham.org, you're one of, you're 0 of 200 million people that have found it. And part of why they're going there is because we are constantly telling people about the experience. We're showing them. These are kids that are out playing at Hovander. This area was named one of the best places to play year-round, and this was the photo of all the recreational opportunities that we have, of all the things that epitomize Whatcom County as a place to play. This is the one that our voters chose as the picture that depicts how to play in Whatcom County. We also have on our website, our most popular area of the website is our event calendar. Locals as well as visitors are coming constantly to that website to figure out what's going on, what can we do while we're here. Your chamber is extremely active in hosting their events and making sure these are all free or available, making sure that people know that there are things to do, places to go, reasons to be here. I'm serious. I was trying to be really, really quick. But there's a couple things I did want to show you. We do, on a monthly basis, we do a visitor information brochure that we produce that is made available at hotels and attractions around the county. This is specifically designed, once people are here, to give them a reason to go out and about. The more that they have to do, the more they spend. So not only can you not let them sleep on your couch, you can't let them just sit and watch TV at your house. They have to get out, and they have to be involved. So the best thing that you can do as the ambassadors of the visitors industry is become familiar with your own community and the community that surrounds you. The more excited you are about this area, the better job you're going to do of selling it, and the easier my job is. And of course, that's what it's all about, to make my job easier. The other thing I wanted to point out to you, and you do have these available at various places throughout Ferndale as well, is our annual visitor's guide that we produce and distribute. These are two of the printed pieces that we use to attract people here and give them a reason to come. Yes, there is a stunning photo of me on one of the pages. Can I just clarify that I asked my staff on numerous occasions not to use that photo, and they insisted on using it? Did you want to know which one?
I already used
it. Right there.
It's very stunning.
Which page is that, Lonnie?
What page?
Oh, yeah, page three.
Fourth page.
Yeah, fourth page. Seriously. Every time I saw a new proof of this magazine, I'd say, please don't use that. Please don't use that. And they would say, but the colors are so good, we have to. I think they're all looking for job security myself. I am more than happy to come back and talk to you anytime you need something fun to talk about. We are very serious about what we do. We take very seriously our job in economic development. But I can tell you that the day that
Is this annually, semi-annually?
That one is annually.
Monthly. Okay. And when is the cutoff, or when do you?
That was like about the 15th of
the
month.
The previous
of
month.
The month previous. Okay. Yep. And of course, there's limited space. I don't know what business you represent, but there's limited space, so we do geographic and different topics that we move throughout. Does anybody have any questions about the industry and what it is that we're doing?
Customer Smelpezzi, then Ingram, and remember, Council, the people in the audience would love it if you use your microphones appropriately.
I think we got some of the best parks, and I'd like to see a park in here. This month, is this the monthly one?
It is.
Okay.
December.
Okay, and so okay. Are you not in there?
No.
Because we do rotate.
You okay.
There are some categories that's like uniquely welcome.
All right. Okay.
And what we do is we have a huge grid on a wall in our office, and we say, okay, so we have to make sure we have three times the Ferndale's in there, three times the Blaine's in there, three times the Linden's in there, et cetera.
That makes sense.
We're really trying to be seasonal as well. So some of the things that are more seasonal will have a higher ranking on that time of the year.
Fair enough.
Councilors Ingram, then Henson.
Are you familiar with a project called the Disney Seminars?
Mm-hmm. I've participated in several.
Well, Ferndale Chamber is trying to set one up. Guess what? Ain't going to happen in Bellingham.
I don't care. I'm going to come and do it in Ferndale.
We don't know where it's going to be because the hotels in Bellingham have refused to even talk to us. You might want to talk to Guy and you might want to talk to the people at Lakeway and Bellwether and say, well, what is up with that? This is bringing huge dollars into town. And yeah, I hope so.
Like tomorrow morning. Councilperson Hanson, microphone, please.
First thing I turn to are the October events because we just completed a very successful Harvest Festival, end of the market, and it's not in here.
No,
it was last weekend.
I know. You were in September 5th because we were concerned that it was too early in the month, so we were trying to rotate things through. You were one of the highlighted listings in September. Is there information brochure to make sure that people knew about it in advance?
Oh, you do this monthly?
We do this monthly.
Okay.
And so when things are within the first 10 days, we really try
this was on the 15th. It was last Saturday.
Okay, I'm more than happy.
Yeah. Okay. No, I'm just pointing out that it's right. So was.
I knew I was going to get that question.
Okay.
Because we made sure it was in there in September because we did a whole harvest.
Oh, if it was in September, that's perfectly acceptable because, like you said, it's warning people that it's coming. You don't, huh? It's warning.
Catapult.
All right. Warning. Not warning. Motivating. If I backed up and took a look at the July event, would the old settlers be in here?
Yes.
In it? All right. Good. Thank you.
It could be in the June one.
No, because old settlers are very last weekend in July.
Hey.
Councilperson Mutchler.
Thanks for being here. The highlighted items is just a marketing. Somebody's paid a little bit more to get the yellow there. Yeah.
So
no, like your personal preference or something like that.
No, we have no personal preference. We have no personal preference. No, in the yellow highlights, people pay a nominal amount. Because we have more than we can put in there every month, we make available to somebody a guaranteed placement if they, I think it's like $25 to do that.
Just one more quick thing, because Mel mentioned the fact that we had a very successful Harvest Festival on Saturday at the Riverwalk. I need to make sure I've got your contact information, because we also on Saturday had the third annual Ferndale Dollars for Scholars Shrimp Feed, which is a huge thing. And you can, but I would like to have it in here next year.
I can tell you as well is that Guy is on our board. He's one of the ex officio members of our board. He's also on our marketing committee, and he is a phenomenal.
phenomenal ambassador for everything that happens, all things Ferndale. And there's not anything that happens here that we're not aware of. If something is happening in Ferndale and the event organizers have not yet posted it on our website, he takes it upon himself to make sure it's on there. So we have very strong partnerships out there.
Do you have a business card?
I do.
Okay. Please.
Two of them. Why she's searching for that councilperson Zimmerman?
Oh, I was just going to prompt her and say, Lonnie, what's the exciting things on standby for 2012?
The Disney thing.
Okay.
No, in all sincerity.
See how fast that works?
I am so glad, from a personal and a professional standpoint, I am so glad the Winter Olympics are over.
Yeah.
I was so tired of the only question I've ever asked, any place I ever went, was what do you think the impact of the Olympics will be? And then for the next year, the only question I was asked is, what was the impact of the Olympics? And in all sincerity, the impact of the Olympics was about 20% increase during the time period, and most of that was Border Patrol, government entities, and rooms that we sold to people who were here to protect our borders. And we're happy to have it because it made the difference between a so-so year and a horrible year.
You're more popular than
you. Thank you, Lonnie.
Am I allowed back here? I feel like I'm backstage.
First time in 4 years.
I think maybe you or Sam's come up here once or twice. But
no, and all the guy told me about the Disney customer service training that you guys got the licensing and the opportunity to offer super host through the community college on an ongoing basis through Whatcom County, and felt very good about that. But Disney,
well, we've got the Disney one all set up and ready to fly, and we've got like 300 confirmed yes we'll be there things from people. We just don't have official list yet.
Well, I'm in.
Councilperson Goodrich.
You're very formal. I don't want to respond to people.
One of the things I want to say is I'm learning to like these little square things I'm finding on places. But I just zapped yours with my phone here to see what it actually brought up. And it only shows me two pages up to the letter D in restaurants.
My IT person is rolling in her grave. She is very focused on making sure that our QR codes, it should bring you to...
Well,
it
brings me to the restaurant site, but it only shows two
now,
pages.
Now, we have
a
mobile app that's supposed to do that, so I will I'll follow
up
on that.
You touch those brochures,
and I scan the brochures. So my phone's no good, right?
I think it's loading.
It's me.
Pointing to her electronic.
Okay, it is. In all sincerity, I will follow up on that. One of the things that we've been doing, and even our print, our traditional print advertising, mm-hmm. is we're doing QR codes that go right to a video. We did a test run in Canoe and Kayak magazine and had the QR code there that said to experience kayaking in Bellingham Bay, and it was Bellingham Bay and Drayton Harbor. You know, scan this. And we had in 10 days, we had a higher number of people who clicked through onto that video than their subscribership numbers. So people were sharing it, telling people about it, handing their magazine to somebody and saying, click on this. So we're very serious about those QR codes. And if that one's not working, I will get to the bottom of it. It's always scary when you introduce technology because there's always somebody there that's going, and I did not touch your phone, so I cannot be blamed for that.
I don't know if the other guys are having the same thing.
It's only under the mobile theme.
It's not a BlackBerry.
It's only under the mobile theme.
Okay.
Okay, any more questions for Lonnie? Councilperson Alpezzi.
Can you give a brief explanation of how this $435 million is figured? Is it a number the state puts out? Or?
It is. So, of course, it's suspect. I'm kidding. There's an annual report that is done by Dean Runyon and Associates, which is a very respected data collection and analysis company based in Portland. And every year they go through different QR code or SECQ. I got too many acronyms in my head. The SIC codes, SIC codes, yeah. SIC codes, And there are certain codes in business that are attributed a portion or all of the revenues to tourism. So we have a portion of restaurants. We have a portion of transportation. We have a portion of retail sales. I have almost 100% of rental cars and hotels. So there are certain SIC codes that go into that mix. And then they aggregate all of those numbers and spit them out back. I get an annual report that shows Whatcom County in general and then breaks it out by community.
That was my next question. How much of that was Ferndale's?
Not as much as I'd like.
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay,
and mainly it's, and in all sincerity, it's because you don't have a lot of hotel accommodations here. And hopefully when those fields get built and there's additional lodging that's affiliated with that, we'll see that go up. Sorry, that was a little political statement on my part.
I would accept that statement. Okay, any more questions? Councilperson Ingram.
Just one quick one. One of the things that we get asked for at the Ferndale Visitor Center, probably more than anything else, especially from people from the north that come in, this is the first place they hit. They see the visitor center sign. They come in. Do you have a map of Bellingham? I don't have any maps of Bellingham.
You don't have maps of Bellingham in the information center?
Nope.
Okay, the first call is going to be to my hotel. Second one to Guy. Why don't you have my maps?
And I've asked Guy and I've asked Corey, and they said it's just really hard to get.
Shoot the messenger.
I'm not. And in all sincerity, it's possibly just a spacing issue, because we certainly have lots of maps available, and we're happy to make them available. Okay.
Okay. Councilperson Zimmerman.
Just one more question. Lonnie, I don't expect an answer right now, but over time, it would be interesting to see if there's a growth in agro-tourism.
I can tell you that it is the fastest-growing segment. Agro-tourism, but you cannot separate culinary or cuisine from agritourism, because people want to see where it comes from, and then they want to see watch the progression onto their plate. And so it is the hugest, fastest growing segment of our industry. It is growing leaps and bounds over recreation, because everyone can eat, not everyone can climb a mountain, and everyone can eat. Thanks. Invite me back more often.
Thank you.
I'll be on time.
Shit, early.
I was early last time, if you guys had a 7 o'clock.
We're in that time zone up here.
Okay, Council, next on your agenda was the proclamation for the Lions Club's 70th anniversary. They've asked that to be pulled. They're going to have a separate celebration that I believe all of you could go to. It's not this Wednesday, but the Wednesday evening after that at the Chihuahua's restaurant. We'll do the proclamation there. I'll read it there. If you'd like to attend, call or ask a line for details. Not this Wednesday, but the following Wednesday at Chihuahua's, the 70th anniversary of the Lions Club. So next up is item E, the ordinance.
Have an email come out on that?
What's that?
Send out an email or something. So
for you guys?
Yeah.
I'll do that. Happy to do this.
So will it be proclaimed at a later thing or just there?
During their celebration.
They wanted it proclaimed at their celebration. You want to, the Lion tells you what to do, you agree with it. Okay, next up, item E.
Okay, good evening, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, Council. Tonight we are bringing back to you the equivalent residential unit, or ERU, ordinance. The ordinance is intended to change our water and sewer connection fee policies. For several years, we've had just a flat fee for water and sewer connection rates, which means that a single-family residence would pay exactly the same dollar for dollar as Bellis Fair Mall would, about $11,000 or so for their water and sewer connection fees. Bellis Fair, or any large user such as that, has a much more significant impact on the overall system's capacity for water and sewer. They simply use more water and sewer. And while our billing rates do address that, as far as our operational day-to-day impacts, they do not address that fundamental capacity at the plant. So if you think about it this way, the average single-family residence in Ferndale uses 210 gallons of water per day. Conversely, a manufacturing facility or a shopping center might use 2,100, 10 times as much. The plant has only that certain capacity, and if you think of it as, you know, basically a unit, maybe one cubic foot of space, a single-family residence that purchases 210 gallons worth only purchases that amount, whereas a shopping center only purchases their 210 gallons but uses maybe 10 times as much. What that ends up being, resulting in, is a single-family residence more or less subsidizing the additional capacity that these other users utilize. And while that might make sense if our development consists only of single-family residences where all users use 210 gallons a day, the practical reality is that we have a wide variety of different users. Some of them use less than 210 gallons a day. Some of them use a lot more. So what this ordinance is proposing to do is take that 210 gallons of water per day and have that equal one. And then any user that comes in, any new development that comes in, would pay their ratio, their equivalent, to that one. So if you have a small bookstore or a small office, you might use less than that one, less than 210 gallons a day. If you have that shopping center, you're likely going to use more than that, and you would pay accordingly. Many jurisdictions have adopted ERU comparisons, and we went out to the literature, the internet, the different websites of various jurisdictions to see what their residential equivalencies were. How much does that bookstore use compared to the single-family residence? How much does the laundromat use compared to that single-family residence? And we found a great many comparables, and we found a lot of similarities between different jurisdictions. At council's direction, we then looked at what our own water and usage is for a variety of different land uses. And our finance department worked with us on that and gave us 12 months worth of data, the last year's worth of data. And then the community development department kind of crunched the numbers. What we saw was that overall, due to conservation measures that the city has employed, our water use per capita is actually lower than many other jurisdictions. As a result, in our equivalent residential unit chart that we have attached, since the last time that you saw it, we've actually reduced the ratios, where we are reflecting that in Ferndale, uses generally use less water than in Phoenix or in Boston and so on and so forth. So we brought them down, which would also then bring the costs down. What it ends up being is about a 5,000-square-foot retail store would be the tipping point, where if it's less than 5,000 square feet, it would actually pay less in water and sewer connection fees than it does now. So your local mom and pops, your smaller stores, would pay less, whereas a 5,000-square-foot or larger would generally pay more. Now, certainly, if you have a coffee shop, which is a relatively high water user, you'd probably pay a little bit more. If you had maybe a clothing store or something like that, you might pay a little bit less. The ultimate intent is to have this be what would amount to a user fee, where you would pay what we project that you will use. If, however, at the end of 1 year, it turns out that the city undervalued what you would use, where you actually used more, the city could require that you pay the delta, the difference between what you should have paid and what you actually paid. Conversely, if you use 25% or more less, or more than 25% less than what we projected, you could be eligible for a refund. We know that users of the same type, a restaurant here versus a restaurant there, might have different water usage. And we wanted to create an ordinance that rewards conservation measures because, as the city administrator has said, the best way to protect your capacity is to conserve it. So with that, we also have some text changes that more or less update the water and sewer connection fee ordinances that have remained in place more or less as they were since 1982. The policies in them have not changed beyond the reflection of the ERU equivalencies. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Councilperson Ingram was first hand up, then Mutchler.
Yori, we don't have any in the city limit right now. We used to, but we don't right currently. But I'm looking here on under institutional, mm-hmm. and you have golf course listed with no fee schedule. Is that because we don't have one?
No, the intent there, and I'm trying to find it on here. The intent there is those are so unique. Do you have a water hazard or do you not? Do you have a locker room or do you not? That
got a lot of grass to water or not?
Exactly. We would anticipate that they would go to the public works director, same as the larger manufacturing plants, and describe to her what their anticipated use would be. They're so unique that it's hard to.
Got it. Thank you.
Councilperson Mutchler?
York, could we interact just for a moment on something that I sent to you earlier today about that first year ERU could be skewed? And I used the example of a million-foot mall coming in that doesn't have 30% occupancy in its first year. So is that something we – because that wouldn't seem right. There, for any number of reasons, they could that first year they could not take any baths or whatever they're going to do. So we need to address that somehow so it is fair.
Absolutely. And so in your example, and it probably works on the higher end of the scale too – in your example, a use would come in, wouldn't have full occupancy, and therefore, at the end of the year, they'd automatically be able to get a refund, we would suppose, because they'd be able to come back and say, we didn't use the water. In the ordinance, the way that it's framed right now, and there are a couple ways of looking at it, is the city may issue a refund. So the city can come up with an administrative guideline to say, if you're not at full occupancy or if you're not maybe at 80% occupancy, since a mall is rarely at 100%, then we could consider that refund. I don't know that we want to have it in the code where it goes through every single possible permutation of the whys, but I think having an administrative policy in place that says, here's the way that we're going to look at it, that way you can't game the system. But also you're not going to be penalized.
So do you feel like the word may gives us the protection from somebody trying to game the system? I mean, I understand we could do that. Mays are kind of squishy words.
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to be good enough?
The may is certainly a defensible argument, but I would think that we could develop a sentence or two.
What if the sentence assumes full occupancy, full development, you know, something that we're assuming that amount, so that you can always refer back to that sentence. We're assuming full occupancy or fully developed.
If a fully occupied development utilizes less than 25% or more than 25%.
Yeah, just that phrase might cover us, perhaps. I'm not a lawyer. Don't pretend to be one.
And I think it would, and we need to remember, too, that this ordinance, like so many of our others, we will learn by doing. I think that the 25% refund potential allows us the opportunity to say that we can't anticipate precisely what these uses are going to be, and it's likely that this council is going to see amendments to this ordinance in the future, maybe even the near future, as we learn more about it. So I would think that if a motion is to be made, possibly it would include that language. And if it works, then we keep it. If not, we can come back and change it.
Thank you, Yori. Councilperson is next.
Yori, can you give me some examples of some cities that are not cities, stores that are about 5,000 square feet here off the top of your head? Just trying to visualize what we're talking about.
To give you an idea on what's less, there are none of the Ferndale Station stores are over 5,000 square feet. None of the stores beyond Cost Cutter and I believe the Asian Bistro are over 5,000 square feet.
Okay.
The new Chase Bank is just under 5,000 square feet.
Okay, that's pretty decent.
Good, fairly good size.
Decent size. That's all I got for now.
Councilor Zimmerman? Or excuse me, Ingram, I'm sorry.
You might, Gary might actually be able to answer this better, Yori, because of his trade. When they build a like a Bellis Fair, they don't have one water meter, do they? Don't the individual storefronts have meters?
No,
so
Bellis
that they
Fair Mall has one water meter.
Really?
Bellis Fair Mall has individual meters for each unit.
For each unit.
But the city of Bellingham, they have one large water meter. Well, they have two water meters. One for sprinkler, one for the landscaping, one for the actual mall, so three.
Wow. So then they get billed, and then they split that bill by however,
correct,
whatever
correct.
The individual stores were. Wow.
Correct.
Okay.
Now, I'll say what they do.
Because I was thinking.
They don't individually go read the meters. Is they basically they basically flat rate like we do, but they at last, I don't know because they've cut back their staff. They used to go look every 3 months and do readings, mm-hmm. and then they flat rate it.
Because John's question.
Spike in the bill, they keep track of
John's it. Question on occupancy and full occupancy, and I would think that would be kind of easy to track. But if they've only got one, if they only have one big meter, I don't think it is easy to track.
Yeah, you can still go it the other way. I mean, you look at say Ferndale Station. If Ferndale Station came in and got their permits, and say for Thrive, so now you got a gym with showers. But then what? At the last minute, maybe they built a gym, but didn't have a occupancy for that. The only worrisome I would see is for developers, they want certainty. I mean, what we're basically doing with planned action is they want certainty of their costs. We hear that constantly. We want to know our exact costs going in. A little bit there where we may want to even go the other way, and with your language can go both ways. I want certainty here. I want certainty here that, hey, if I use more or use less, there's an avenue for that. But I think that they would probably know the answer to that question beforehand. Customer Smushler?
If I were to say, follow me, would this be two or close to two, that currently with the one size fits all, that homeowners are subsidizing the cost of developers who are coming in and paying for one unit right now? The impacts of developers are being subsidized by homeowners, by the person that buys that first home.
I think that would be accurate, yes.
And if that is true, could there be a discussion or a case to be made that we could actually lower the cost to the home builders? We've had a number of discussions over this year about trying to make impact fees more affordable to home builders. Would that be a healthy discussion that maybe the ERU itself, the actual rate, is a smaller amount since we're going to recapture a lot of that with the higher amounts from the bigger people?
I think that our finance director could speak to that. I don't think at this point we would be discussing a reduction in the single-family rate.
That would be my going-in position, but we are on the hook to do a comprehensive water, sewer, storm rate study next year. We can certainly consider the current pricing on connections by various classes of customers.
We may have some history by then to see what the revenue stream looks like from such an ordinance. Because I know there's been some interest in seeing what we could do for home builders.
We'd probably do that rate study mid-year next week.
Okay. Customers in Goodrich and then Pezzi.
I personally am kind of having a hard time with this just because there's so many variables that are in it. And I was just thinking here, even on the home thing, I paid the same rate as the Mutchler family paid for their connection fee. There's a big difference in water usage between our two houses. I just barely make the minimums every month and things. But yet, I paid the same amount and probably same with the rest of our condo owners. We all are individually metered. And just the I'm just having a hard time grasping this whole thing because there's so many variables and other issues and things that I personally am leaning toward just keeping it at the flat rate. But I can understand the other side of it for some of the possible larger businesses. But to me, you'll make it up on the monthly revenue you're going to get from their water usage.
But one of the big differences, and that is a good point, but one of the big differences is the monthly rates are intended really primarily for maintenance and operations, whereas the water and sewer connections are intended really more for the overall capacity. The difference between single-family residential, Councilmember Mutchler and you, when you look at it, there are differences, but they're kind of over here, where you then look at some of the commercial and industrial, where it's 20 or 30 times, and it's not only the big users, but it's the users that you wouldn't expect. When you look at it, some of them were really staggering. The restaurants, for example, the coffee shops, are so different from single family that they are their own animal.
Councilperson Malpezzi, Mutchler, then Henson.
Two things, Jerry. One, I noticed in the cover sheet or the staff report, the legal is underway. Have we gotten that finished, or we're just not going to get this legally reviewed?
I don't think that I amended that since our committee meeting. It's been reviewed, I believe. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did they have anything drastic? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And second thing, the staff report talks about the non-industrial users. How about the industrial users? Is there any wide sweeping changes for an industrial use?
The idea there would be they would, similar to the golf course example, it would go through the public works director where they would demonstrate how much they expect to utilize, and then
okay.
We go from there.
All right.
Councilperson Mutchler, then Henson.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to Councilmember Goodrich's concern. I have the same concern that it's not fair right now. It's not equitable, and there's not going to be any way of being 100%. You can't predict how many people are going to live in anybody's home or how many businesses are going to go in. But I like this because it gets closer, plus there is that one-year review to see how it's going. So I think if we leave it the way it is, it's grossly inequitable. But at least this gets us going. And as Yuri was mentioned, we do have to pay water every month. And I'm sure my water bill is a little higher than your bill, although we put as many kids in the one tub as we can.
Councilperson Hanson.
And this is in response to Brent as well. This whole thing of a single rate for everyone, business and industry, is really not what the code says. The code currently has more what we're considering tonight. The evolution of why that code got ignored is a whole different issue. But that, in fact, is what occurred. Some planning community development director in the past decided it was too complex, didn't agree with it. I don't know what the reasons were, but we're not following the code now. And this is at least a step to get that code modified so that there is some equity, and I think we're probably going to tweak it down the road.
And we were able to track a little bit of how it evolved over time, where if you look in the mid to late 90s, and maybe even before, a little bit after, we saw staff moving away from it a little bit because the old system had only about 7 or 8 different uses. So it had them have to extrapolate for every single use. They simply didn't have the tools, which is really what this long list is intended to do, for them to make that determination. So you saw in some staff reports some pretty run-of-the-mill video store or something where they said, well, we're just going to go with a flat fee for you because you're easy. And then it turned into gospel.
Okay, I have Councilperson Ingram, Zimmerman, then back to Mutchler.
Well, Yuri, I think you've done a pretty incredible job. I just wish you'd make the font size a little bigger.
Yeah.
But I would make a motion to approve Agenda Bill 11-10-007.
Second.
Point of order, shouldn't we do the public hearing?
There's no public hearing.
No, no public hearing? Okay, I thought I heard public hearing. My bad.
But we still have further discussion, so Councilperson Zimmerman is next.
I'd support this. I'd kind of look at it like a latecomer's fee to simplify things for myself, in that we built the capacity in a lot of the senior citizens today that are experiencing a lot of heavy water and sewer rates over the years. We built the plant for capacity for growth. Now the capacity is there, and so it's only equitable, because historically it hasn't been, and if we're an opportunity to recover some of that stuff, and again, to prepare for the future, I just think it's a good, it makes a lot more sense. It's, we're playing catch-up, but I think it's with what we may have in mind, I think it's going to be a good thing for all the ratepayers.
I would like to point out one last thing, maybe to Councilmember Goodrich. For residential planned unit developments actually generate less water, use less water, about 80% mm-hmm. of single-family residents. So we would be seeing for they and for multifamily units a decrease in their fees from what they currently pay. So there would be that in there.
Well, if I could tack onto it, there was a formula when this first thing started out, you know, what, 15, 17 years ago, is that there was just hookup fee, and they had extrapolated out a certain growth curve. Well, as we see, that hasn't happened. So that kind of that formula is out. And so this is the best way we can do to kind of do a skate-safe recovery to help everyone move along.
Councilperson Mutchler?
I support the ordinance, but I would like to offer an amendment per earlier discussion that we would include the language where it's talking about the one-year trial period.
Review
period. That it would include the assumption that the development or the businesses at full occupancy. And I'm not quite sure how to word that, but I think the intent is clear, I think. So I'd like to make that motion for that amendment.
Second for that?
I'll second.
Okay. Discussion on the amendment only at this point? I'll let Yuri get caught up
yeah.
in a second. Sam, you're there? Okay, discussion on John's amendment.
I don't know. I guess I'm just a little fuzzy on the intent. What's, help me out with the intent.
No, the intent was that a business may, let's say it's a retirement home, and then we only get 20% occupancy, and they come back in the city and say, hey, we barely used any water, but the next year they got 100%. That our model is based on the assumption that they're fully occupied.
Up and running.
And, okay. So they can't come back and say we want to run it. We want money back, but in the next year they're using water like crazy. Okay. That's the intent.
Thank you.
Does that give Yuri? It's a question for Yuri. Does that give you room to write some administrative rules that might take you out 3 or 4 or 5 years before you actually set what that final hookup fee was going to be? But that's kind of what I just read into that motion was that. You're assuming full occupancy. Well, if they're not full occupancy, do we have a time frame? Can you set an administrative time frame that would say, okay, we're going to assume you'll be at full occupancy by 3 years or 5 years or something like that?
If that would be council's direction, a multi-year strategy, we could do that. What we could also do is say you're at 20% occupancy, and so we're going to multiply that by five to reach the 100%. Which would be my preference.
Does the same thing.
Or they could stay at the prescribed number that you have prescribed.
Or they could just accept that.
Yeah, accept what we had already decided at permitting.
Councilperson Goodrich?
I was just going to say, I think you're going to have to do some sort of multi-year thing. Because I was just looking here, I got another question for you, unrelated to the motion. But like where I work, we're just now hitting the mid 90% occupancy of our building, and it was built in 2006. Hmm. So it's taken that long to get up, you know, up there. So I think you're going to have to, you know, have that for something. Now, if a big box, Mr. Big Box, comes and plops down, he's going to open his doors, and you're going to know right away because he's not going to have, you know, a lot of things, but if you're talking about bringing in tenants like a mall or a Ferndale Station, I don't know how long Ferndale Station took to get to its occupancy.
Well, and you rarely have a shopping center that has 100% because there is that churn that goes on. Maybe they're at full occupancy when you're 80%, same as we have full employment when you're at 5% unemployment.
Councilperson Mutzler?
I don't have your job here, but I could see a scenario like Brent's where, let's say they're at 50%. They've been at 50% for a long time. If you take half the fee, but they're still at or above what we prescribe anyway based on the math, you still can work with that. It seems like there's wiggle room for both sides to make that work.
Remember discussion just on the amendment, Councilperson Zimmerman?
I would tend not to favor this amendment because the capacity there is to fight the fires at 100%, not at 50% due to the occupancy. The capacity is there. That's what we're paying for is the capacity. Even though they can't lower their rates enough to fill it, shouldn't be our problem.
Councilperson Mutzler?
I don't think the intent of the amendment is to impact that at all. I think that the intent of the amendment is to first of all, allowing people to suggest that, you know, there may be a real-life situation where they're not using as much water in a year, and that's a real situation. But we don't want that provision to allow them to skirt the system, to cheat the system. And I don't think that could happen with that.
Okay, any discussion on Councilperson Mutzler's amendment?
I know there really wasn't a question in there, Councilmember Zimmerman, but I'd be curious to hear staff's take on it. And is that?
Well, similar to a traffic impact fee, if you are an unsuccessful business, and, you know, not to say that being at less than full capacity you're unsuccessful, but if we anticipate that you would have generated 100 vehicle trips in the PM peak hour and you happen to only generate 50, you've paid for that 100 and you've reserved your capacity. So over time, as you become more successful, then you've already bought into that capacity. Similar, you know, to Chihuahuas. Chihuahuas, when they opened, the day they opened, they might not have been jam-packed, but they slowly gained that reputation. I think that the primary objective of this 25% is to recognize that people, business owners, can make individual decisions to conserve, to operate their business differently, and that if we were incorrect in our projections, that we can get it right after that first year.
Okay, thank you.
Councilperson Goodrich?
No, this is not on the motion. Okay. It's on the current motion.
Okay, further questions on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, all in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Okay, the motion carries 5-1 with Councilperson Zimmerman voting no. Councilperson Goodrich?
I have two questions. One is for our treasurer. If we're going to collect $10,000 from somebody, are we going to have to hold that for a year, or are we going to so we have money to rebate, if there's a rebate that, you know, I mean, how would that aspect work, or we just have to make sure we have money in the funds?
That's probably a good idea to put some of that money in a special reserve and title it refund, potential refund, commercial businesses, new commercial businesses, potential refund. Yeah, that'd be a good idea. I like it.
And then the other question I have for Yori is I was looking – and this is, again, kind of goes back to my dislike of this, whereas it has, I can't find them now here, it had nursing homes at 1.5, but a retirement home as 0.7. I don't see the difference, that much of a difference being in the industry, why a nursing home would be at 1.5 residential units, but a retirement home at 0.7.
You know, that right there is
I might comment on that. Nursing homes usually have congregate meals, while a retirement center is more independent living, and you have a higher percentage of the folks that actually go out to eat. When I was in La Conna, when we put in the retirement inn, it's an active retirement center. It's not a nursing home. And one of the things that became abundantly clear after they built it was that they generated less water and sewer than even the multifamilies, because they were indeed active. They went out to eat quite a bit. they just didn't do the kind of congregate meals, and they traveled more than the, you find in a nursing home. So I actually have seen where water sewer usage in a real nursing home where you have a dedicated medical staff and somewhat a clientele that is more inbound than heading out into the countryside. So I've actually seen that.
I just know in the two retirement / assisted living facilities that I personally have worked in, like what we do now, we do 140 some meals at lunch. Well, and where I have 166 units, so.
So yeah. not to interrupt, but yours, was that prior to the assisted living?
Well, I think it was more the market. It was the Lacana Retirement Inn is what they actually call it from a marketing standpoint. It was really geared towards the active senior. It really wasn't set up for the where you have the 24-hour medical care, and these are folks that are as healthy as anyone, and they simply decided to sell their house and move to Lacana and move into a one-bedroom apartment.
So you might want to just actually look at your classifications. It brings up a very good point. I mean, I'm familiar with that industry.
Yeah.
100% assisted care is you might want to look at your classifications. I just think there you're getting some drastic differences.
Yes. Yeah. And one thing too is that look back might account for the operations. So if you do have someone who is under a one category that rightfully should have been under a lesser usage category, that look back that we're talking about on the credit standpoint would help even that out after the fact.
And if they see going into the application, wow, that's way higher, they can always, similar to traffic, do that independent calculation and say to Janice, here's what we're expecting to utilize.
So it's still this administrative control. Mm-hmm. Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, and I can't speak to the disparity of the example, except that the example is a good way to illustrate that this can't be perfect. A guy could build the thing, and he builds it as a active lifestyle, wild and crazy retirement home, and then 2 years later, very easy retrofit it to, or say 5 years later, and that's just too bad for the city in a sense. Mm-hmm. It's going to use more water, but it's just not going to be a perfect system, but it's a lot better than what we have right now.
Councilperson Hansen?
Just going to respond, I've had my father-in-law and mother-in-law both went through both assisted living followed by nursing home. And the nursing home part of that, it's almost a transitionary thing from hospital. The nursing home is a much, much higher care level than in the assisted living. Assisted living, those people tend to be independent. They may have three meals a day still, but they live in their own apartments. They are not assisted in their bathing necessarily, and they may they sit in their own rooms and watch TV and what have you. Whereas in a nursing facility, there's a much higher level of nursing care. In that nursing facility. I think they are different facilities.
But does the nursing care equate to more water and sewer usage?
Well, I think so. Yeah, because I think you have more caregivers. You also have, the difference between an assisted living facility. I'm not so sure that the sterilization and the scrub downs and what have you that occur in an assisted facility are the same as in a nursing facility. It's not that you don't keep them clean, you do, but in a nursing facility, more similar to a hospital, that sanitizing is done not just daily, it's done several times a day. And so I think over the time you'd find that the question is, the gray area is it a nursing facility or is it an assisted living? And that's because some of them get really, that becomes a real fuzzy line sometimes. So
what's your license for by the state would be the way to determine that.
It's interesting that with our traffic impact fees, we focused all of a sudden on preschools, and now we're focusing on the other end of the extreme.
Okay, further discussion on the original motion that's been moved and seconded. Seeing none,
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion
aye.
Carries.
No. I oppose it.
Okay. Motion carries 5-1 with Councilors Goodrich. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Murray. Okay. Next up, capital project updates.
A postscript to this. Now that we've done this, and in the next few months, years, whatever it might be, should we see some large-scale development come to the city? I do want to kind of plant the bug in your ear. If you remember, right now, we pay 100% of our operations for water and sewer out of a combination of monthly user fees and connection fees. Put it another way, we don't take our connection fees and sock them away in a reserve fund to pay cash for future capital improvements. I would love to be able to do that, love to be able to do a lot of things. So just, again, food for thought. If in the future this starts playing out and we start getting these revenues, not only might it be a good idea to put it into a reserve for simply, though we talked about a payback of a credit, but it might be a good idea to put it into a reserve so the tendency to roll them into our cash and realize that we might be able to lower our water sewer fees and still live off both of them could be lessened. So I just hopefully someday we can actually have a war chest for water sewer capital items and not have to go out to the bond market if and when we ever do need these improvements.
Mayor, could I just want to ask you a question. So because you said this before in a previous meeting, but I'd like the audience and maybe the paper to hear this, that this changes the amount of money the city received for right. We talked about Bella's Fair in Bellingham. They paid how much for their sewer?
In Bellingham, I don't have the exact numbers.
It was hundreds of thousands.
It was a 10-inch meter, and I'm assuming that Bella's Fair would require a 10-inch meter. I have to have that caveat. As the mayor said, they also have an irrigation and water, too, and for firefighters. $900,000.
So, and before today, that Bella's Fair, if it landed up down the street here in Ferndale, would have paid $11,000.
Well, $6,000, because the $900,000 doesn't include the water or the irrigation.
Okay.
So.
And then after today, a mall that size would be?
A mall that size is, it's called 1 million square feet.
Okay.
So they would pay the equivalent of making me do math.
And well, I thought you had it once before.
Let's say half
okay.
It depends how you're broken up because they're subletting it. If you had 10 item or 10
our
stores versus 25.
More than
it's a big number.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
But less than the city of Bellingham.
Yeah. Less than Bellingham, but probably somewhere between the two numbers. Thank you very much.
Okay, moving on to capital project updates. We'll start with the new police station. We'll go to Administrator Young.
Yeah, the project continues to move along rather smoothly. We did have one issue we talked about in committee, and that is the sewer line that came out of the building didn't go where the plan said it went. We now know where it goes. Now we need to decide whether we want to use it or indeed run a new line, but it's better now to know at least where the sewer line goes to. It does. It comes out and wraps around the back side of the building and goes down to Lego. Interestingly enough, this may just be for by golly, but someone who is one of the old-timers in town told me that the idea was that initially where the public works yard is, we were going to build a city hall, and the back door to the library was really intended to be the front door. So the idea of the sewer line running down there made sense because it was in the open plaza area that was going to be between the library and the new city hall, so the new line would simply come in. So logically, it all makes sense, but of course things change, and now it.
But logic goes up.
Exactly.
I would like to object to him referring to me as one of the old timers in town.
You mind old timers?
They're old.
I'm just objecting to the old timer.
You're old settlers.
Well, considering we're the same age.
The majority of our old settlers that are active are below 30.
Yeah, that's true. So, but otherwise, again, it's progressing along rather well. They're still continuing to work on getting the building buttoned up so the rain doesn't impact it as much. But we're making very good progress on it.
Okay. Okay, next up is the Main Street project.
She's
going to do all of them?
Yeah,
Katie's just going to stay up there the whole time, and you're just going to observe.
Yes, I don't know if Greg wants to cover the library.
Well, yeah, I can quickly do the library. We're continuing. We should. Our anticipation is to issue permits hopefully by the end of the month. So that will be, as we talked about before, rather a big milestone for the library project.
Okay, we'd like to welcome Katie Rabbit.
Can I ask one question?
Yes, you may.
Minister Young, have we finished the purchase of the house on the corner of Washington?
Yes.
I'll refer to that. I have a report on the mayor report.
Oh, okay.
Okay, Katie, your show.
Boy, if you could hear me. One more slide.
Just say you're sorry.
Oh, sorry.
Hang on.
Really, I'm sorry.
Right.
Does that work?
Right.
Yeah, that's
can
perfect.
You see it now? Can you see it now?
To cycle forward, the page, upper page down, or there's also a left mouse button on there. Both on the left-hand side there.
Oh, got it. Okay. So Main Street, we've been working on, we've been meeting with property owners, and this is the portion of Main Street from basically the Douglas Road improvements to Church Road. So for the last couple of weeks, we've been meeting with the property owners to that are adjacent to the future project, and we've been going over the planned improvements, and we've been talking to them about obtaining right-of-way. Now, there's 26 property owners in total. Some we need temporary construction easements from only. Some we need to purchase right-of-way from. And so we've met with approximately half, just over half, 11 out of the 26. There's five that we just need easements from only, so we've sent that information off to them to review, and we've got some of those easements back. So it's been it's always interesting talking to folks about their property and obtaining right-of-way, but it's been going pretty well, I think.
That's a very confusing photo.
Yeah, that's kind of hard to...
Those are all three different strips, right?
Right. Isn't the top left church? And the bottom right is the...
No, it's not
church.
It's Main the whole way.
Here's the...
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's Church Road. So if you're coming down Church Road, you're going to stop, you're going to take a left, and you're going to go down Main Street. And then this is the match line to this, which you continue down. This is Shannon. Mountain View, Main Street. Hendrickson is right here. And then you skip back down across. That would be my memory.
It's New Life Church.
Is that Hendrickson again?
That's
It's the church. Eagle Parkway Place, whatever that is. And then Douglas Road. Mm-hmm. We actually have a it's really kind of nice when we meet with the property owners. We did this for church, too. We've got a giant map. It's actually longer than the table in the conference room. And so it's a little bit of an older aerial map, but we're able to sit down. We test everybody. We try to keep it jovial. It's like, okay, if you can pick your property, then you're doing good. So we sit down and we discuss it that way. And it has the proposed improvements and shows where the sidewalk and the lanes and that sort of thing are going to be.
So the yellow hash marks, is that something that you've purchased now that you could control right away?
The yellow,
like here.
Yeah, the yellow actually represents, and I don't know if this is the most current version of the right-of-way map or not, but the yellow basically, in fact, it's not because I can tell by the corner, the piece of property on the corner of Church and Main, but the yellow is basically the property that we need to acquire in order to construct the improvements.
That you need.
Yes.
A question on that. On the
get Lonnie Rom back here.
plug in the USB cable at the back, that's,
there you go. You got it.
That's what gets the remote going.
You got it, Katie.
Sorry, I just noticed it. Okay. In theory.
On the streets, what do I get? Reminded me, how far does the sidewalk, or what does it go up? Is it going to tie into something, or are we just going to wrap it around the corners? Or?
I don't know the exact dimension. I'd have to look that up. No, but usually with these road projects, what they do is they install what's called a curb return. So basically, it rounds those corners out.
We're not tying into any. There's no existing sidewalks or something that we have to tie into, or.
There are sidewalks on Eagle Place, I do believe, but I don't think on any of the other adjacent streets that there are existing sidewalks. But it's just standard practice to install the curb returns.
There is a Pioneer Meadows too. At Pioneer Meadows.
Pioneer Meadows. The
last development on the left is your head for your group.
Right. We'd just be tying into their sidewalk, which
right.
is actually the front on Main Street.
Yeah.
Correct.
Katie?
Yes.
You had a church corner there. What's that called? Is that for a bus or?
Yeah, there's actually two locations on Main Street where a bus pullout will be installed, and one is at that vacant property at the corner of Church and Main.
But that's why it's a little
bold. Right. And I had, oops, sorry.
On button.
This is at night.
Yeah, and then the,
is that it?
Dead. That's dead.
That's not bad.
No, I think the voice was over.
Yeah, I've had.
Can
you just talk it from here?
Well, the bulb went out.
One way to put it.
Can you hit that button?
I saw a power thing pop up on the screen.
Do you want me to play with it while you're talking?
This is where you say, if you can imagine this.
Yeah.
Well.
But I'm 16. I don't care.
Ah, power.
Are there any bus pullouts going east on Main Street?
No, all the two bus pullouts, the other one that's going to be placed will be there at Shannon in front of the, I think there's a dentist office there, but they're all west. Did you say eastbound or westbound?
Eastbound.
Yeah, just westbound, because that's the route that WTA is.
So we're making a long-term commitment to the facility, never thinking that the bus is going to change directions.
Not necessarily.
WTA is.
Yeah, well, no. In terms of WTA, it's not necessarily true that if you don't put a bus turn out that you can never go the other direction. We know they go westbound. Okay. If they decide because of volume and whatever to go westbound on Main Street, you're probably looking 20 years out. And just like they stop right out in front of Hagen's, they stop right on Main Street. It would be better if they had a bulb out there, but they stop right on the street, right there. So it's not, you're not saying it'll never happen. It's just that it's not likely to happen. And the reason is, if you take a look at the way that bus goes, the door opens onto the inside. And you've got all of your schools on the inside of that square.
Yeah, they wouldn't have to cross the street.
Okay, Katie?
So the next project on the list is the well water supply project. And we've been making very good progress with that. I'll kind of go over what I know about the waterline portion. The Tiger Construction started this couple months ago. They've installed nearly two miles of water line. That included a bore under Main Street. There was That's the photo on the upper left-hand corner. When they pushed that pipe under there, they put it on some rolling, almost like sawhorses, and pulled the pipe through after they had poured under the street. The upper right-hand corner is a photo of where there's a 4-inch gas main on Imhoff at Douglas, where the gas company had to come in and spend about 3 days rerouting their gas main so Tiger's crews could install the pigging station. And what a pigging station does is it allows you to put it's called a pig, which is, it can either be hard or soft or whatever, but you force it through the line and it cleans the line. And then there's a photo of that in the middle here. Then there's some other photos where they've installed the water line and have poured the press blocks.
Katie, that the one that's right above Paul in the middle on his side there,
mm-hmm.
Where's that photo taken?
That one, which,
right,
this
down
one?
below, right there. Where's that one taken?
That, you can see the apartments there. That's at the intersection of Douglas and Imhoff, looking north. So you're standing in the middle of Imhoff Road, looking north. Those are the apartments in the background.
So what's the finished grade? That looks like it's set way above grade, is it?
This manhole is, and I don't know that I have a photo of that. These pigging stations, in order to get the pig into the pipe, you have to, there's some spools with a cap on it. So you have to actually get into a vault and take that lid off, put the pig in, and then force the pig through the line. And so this manhole lid is actually, they haven't installed it yet. It's just sitting on the side of the road. So this is prior to installation of the manhole vault lid.
Okay, so that finished raised thing at the intersection won't be there?
No.
Okay. End show.
And so the next photo, I took this photo today. Basically, this is the photo showing from Imhoff Road to the plant adjacent to the biosolids field. It's really hard to see, but
is that a new fence there, Katie? I saw that today.
Yeah, there's a smooth wire. I think it's 4-strand wire fence. And what that is the water line. You can see there's a air vac right here. So the water line's installed right along the fence on the south side, and then our big sewer line's installed just to the south of that. And so the fence, basically what that does is it allows for separation between the farming operation and our underground utilities so nothing gets damaged. The photo in the middle are some big valves. Those look like they're like 12-inch valves. The photo in the upper right here, that's where the water line crosses on Indian Road, head south. And then there's some other various photos. Council Member Zimmerman was asking about that vault. These are the vaults as they're being delivered. And then the final product, although that isn't actually the same location, looks like this with the manhole lid on the top.
Ground, okay.
Yeah. So as far as that portion of the project goes, we are we're coordinating with RAS Construction. Tiger is. RAS will be completing the last short section of 18-inch pipe at the plant and installing the final pig station. And when that's in and tested and complete, then Tiger will complete their contract out by actually doing the pigging of the lines, make sure the pigs go through appropriately and that the line is clean. So the next second half to this whole project is the facilities portion, and got some photos here. I'm going to let Janice kind of talk about it a little bit. This is the
site.
Well, this is a Douglas Well site, and so maybe I'll just yammer on about it, and
yeah,
she can fill in where
okay.
I'm falling short. This is a photo fairly early on of the Douglas Well. As if you were standing on Douglas Road looking south, there's some conduit and that sort of thing that's been excavated in and placed. The future well house is right there. This center photo is a photo of the telemetry panel. In the next slide, you'll see where I actually I opened up the panel, and there's just a whole gob of wires in there to allow the operators to be able to run the well, monitor it, get alarms, and that sort of thing. You can see here, this is kind of looking at from the same direction. The well house has been, the blocks are going up, the door's framed in. And then this photo here, that's from actually today, if you were to go down there. You can see, and sorry, I didn't have enough time to put these all as individual slides, but the some of you had asked about the generator. It sits on a pad just to the north side of the building, so it sits on the exterior. And here's a better photo of that. Some of these photos are from the interior of the pump house, the well house, where all the electrical and piping equipment are. And then the photo on the lower right, PSC, I think it was 2 weeks ago, they actually set a new pole for the power service to the building.
Question.
I know a long time ago we talked about down the future needs that if we had we could put another well in at Douglas site, would they have to build another building, or would it go in?
Most likely, it'd be another building.
Another building and everything, and just tie into the piping and stuff.
Well, at another site, because you're sucking a certain area of water dry.
Well, no, they talked about building another one right there at that site. So.
But if you're sucking all the water out of it, I mean, that's why we have it at one behind the shop, the library, the police station, and one down here, because it's two different sources of groundwater.
It's actually the same aquifer.
Same aquifer.
It goes all the way down to the river.
Right, and the city does have additional water rights to mm-hmm. withdraw some of that groundwater at the Douglas site.
So we could put another well at Douglas.
Mm-hmm. If it would.
Because they can only pump so much out of the one.
Right, and there's a recovery rate and everything like that. So geohydrologist call.
Enough there for a second. Well,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We have additional water rights at that location. Yeah. We're not
paid withdrawing. Good money for those consultants.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what they told us.
No, we have the money water rights to back it up.
Yeah. Hey, Katie?
The next slide is the shop well in the upper left-hand corner. You can see this is the start of the well house, a porta slab. They did all the underground utility work first, stubbed it through, exposed it through the ground, and then porta slab around. You can see here below that they're setting blocks for the building. Again, there's a shot of the interior of the well house with the piping. You can see right here that's where the well itself is. You notice at the roof of the building, in case some reason you need to get equipment in or out of there.
Lift the pump out.
Yeah, the roof hatch is there for access. There is a new generator up at the shop. It's located just to the south of where they work on the vehicles and on the north side of the three-sided building where we store some stuff kind of on the west side of the property.
Where's the fuel stored for both sites? Underground, above ground?
They're part of the generator. There's fuel
right in there.
Yeah. Okay. The base of the generator is the fuel tank.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Let's see. The buildings are very similar. Like I said, I did pull open one of the panel doors. This isn't as impressive, I guess, in a photo as it is in real life. That panel is taller than I am and about this wide, and there's a lot of electrical equipment in there.
A bunch of water.
There's a bunch of wires. So, and that's just for the telemetry system. The other bank of panels is the rest of the controls that actually run the pump and the well. And so this photo down in the center, that was taken today. So those well houses are pretty well closed up.
So I know we don't have an exact date yet, but we're still estimating that the citizens of Ferndale will drink way better tasting water by mid-December.
I believe that's correct.
We will have one filter online mid-December.
Okay.
Now, from an operational point of view, the Douglas well is the primary water source, and then the shop kicks in when needed, or they both will be running and feeding them?
They could be both running. So it's kind of like a recipe. So Mike's going to have to kind of get it figured out on as far as running, looking for what's most efficient and maintaining water quality.
They've also been working on various improvements at the plant. Most of it's electrical in nature. You see here there's some more telemetry panels. The electrician was in there today doing some electrical work. I don't know. I didn't quiz him too thoroughly. So you can see all the conduits that have been added as part of this project. There has been a tank installed for some of the materials that are needed to help blend the water and make it, you know, safe to drink.
Is that where the magnesium is?
Manganese
is counter.
From what I understand, which is in a great depth, it's called a caustic. It holds the caustic, which is basically the
alkaline subject for balance the acidity of the pH of the water.
Right. This is actually, they started in on installing that last section of 18-inch line that I was mentioning earlier. So this is a photo of that. And then the 18-inch pigging station will be installed here. And then there's some more panels. So did anybody have any questions about that? No. So the next project on the list is the 2nd Avenue and Malloy Avenue sidewalk projects. Contract time started today. The contractor should be on site tomorrow and starting work. It's been the 2nd Avenue portion's been staked, construction staked. Our guys are helping out in order to keep costs down. They've removed vegetation down on the 2nd Avenue portion. They've also relocated some meters where they needed to be moved on the Malloy portion. So we've done what we can to notify residents. We've sent out letters to let people know that the project will be underway shortly, and we've actually got really good feedback. People are excited about this project. Do you have any questions about that?
What's their completion date on that?
35. Yeah, it's 35 working days, so push us out into November. I'm hoping not. So here's some photos, pre photos, before they start work. It's Malloy looking north, Malloy looking south, Malloy looking north, that sort of thing, and the 2nd Avenue. I'm hoping to be able to take some photos as they go along. It's a long project, linearly. It's a lot of sidewalk to install. Next and then last on the list is the Eaton, Somerset, Willard, and Washington sewer project, otherwise known as Griffintown or Alley Sewer. So as you know, that will replace some aged sewer lines. I think we showed you before some of the manholes are completely constructed out of brick, which is not really standard today's construction. They're all precast concrete panels. There's also some problems with roots in the line. So, yeah, this sewer project will help alleviate that.
Are they being lined?
No, it's a complete excavation and replacement. So we'll be digging in a new sewer. The alley itself is exceedingly narrow. It'll be a challenging project. We met actually with Colcurcio today and Cascade Natural Gas. Cascade has a 4 as well as, I believe, a 2-inch line. Because the alley's so narrow, we're trying to fight for the same space. So Cascade Natural Gas will actually be relocating their gas line to get out of the way and allow us enough room to get the sewer in. So right now Cascade is scheduled to start work the first of next week, with Colcurcio giving them a little bit of time to get ahead of them, and then sewer portion will start.
What's the estimated time for this project?
I believe there's 35 working days on that as well.
Councilperson Ingram?
Katie,
microphone?
I'm not even sure if this one works.
Does this one work?
Yeah.
In order to keep 2nd Avenue, the new 2nd Avenue, flowing smoothly and everything and the way it was intended to, SSC is using the alleys for garbage collection. Is that going to, how's that going to work? Have we chatted with them maybe?
That's a good question.
And let them know that we're going to be tearing that alley up, and for a couple of weeks they may have to collect garbage from the front?
Yeah, it's too early to tell. I'll have to call them and work that out.
Yeah. Cause,
but I appreciate you mentioning that.
Yeah, and I'm not sure of the school buses. I'm not sure if the school buses were – I think the school buses were only going to pick up on Portal Way. I think the kids all go over to Portal Way to pick up on the school buses. I don't think the school bus will be an issue, but the garbage trucks are using the alleys.
That was my observation this afternoon, that the buses were dropping kids off on Portal.
Councilperson Goodrich?
What happens to the existing sewer when you're tearing up and putting in a new line? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, the contractor is required to submit for approval. The city will review it and then approve it if we think it's appropriate. They have to actually pump the sewer around. It's not tidy.
And it's above ground.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you'll see a pipe running down the middle of along the curb of the. In this case, it won't be, but when they did 3rd Street, it ran right along the curb. Oh.
You know, in some instances, when they install the new sewer, they'll be digging almost in exactly the same spot as the old sewer. So what that allows the contractor to do, because you're not really sure where some of the side services are, you want to be able to excavate the old line, determine where the services tie in, and make sure you catch all those so they get connected into the new.
Cascade moving that permanent move on their gas line?
Correct.
That's fantastic.
Well, it's part of their franchise agreement. They're required, if they're located in our right-of-way, to do that at no cost to the city. Cool. So I think that's all I had.
Okay. Any more questions for Katie before she ends up?
Thank you.
Keep going. Okay, next up, item G, Eagle Indicator Updates.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm also going to ask Eric Whedon, the chair of the Eagle Board, to come on up and do a lot of the presentation and answer some questions.
Lots of them.
Whedon, welcome. Nice to see you again.
I'm going to introduce and give the overview, and then I think that if there are questions, that Eric would be happy to come up. The Eagle Board has met twice over the last month to go over these issues, as well as to review the new library project. And I want to just say on a personal note how impressed I have been with them as they've gotten together. As you may know, due to the economy, we haven't had the opportunity to have a new retail development over 20,000 square feet since Eagle went into effect. So the Eagle Board has been looking at some fake mythical projects and has been kind of truth testing them. But recently they've been looking at real projects, again, the library project, as well as looking at these new potential indicators. And the manner in which those five volunteers have worked together and have quizzed staff and have held development or the potential development's feet to the fire has been really impressive, where they haven't backed down in the face of, hey, we're going to bring $200,000, $1 million of new sales tax to the city. They have reminded each other that their mission is not to cave in the face of dollar signs, but instead to really seek the best possible mitigation strategies for the project. And they've also, their depth of their knowledge has been extremely impressive, where they have gone deep into the code sections that we reference in EAGLE and have discussed amongst themselves the most proper way to acknowledge or to evaluate it. So I think that a lot of kudos should go to those volunteers. With that said, we always want to keep EAGLE at the cutting edge to the greatest extent possible. And so even though EAGLE hasn't been used, I don't believe that that's any excuse not to go through it on a regular basis and to change it where necessary. What we've heard from talking to folks who have done large development, retail development in the past in other cities, is that EAGLE is a force to be reckoned with, but not necessarily to be afraid of. That EAGLE, as it's currently laid out, is doable, isn't doable by just closing your eyes and doing it. It's a high obstacle, a high threshold to jump up through, but it provides a better alternative than the LEED standards we've heard. It provides something that's really a roadmap to success, and I think the mayor wanted to talk about that a little bit later. But with that said, we have made a variety of changes to the EAGLE indicators, or we propose a variety of changes. Generally speaking, they are intended to clarify the existing policies, to make more certain what our expectations are, and so that there is that expectation on the part of the developer, the points that they would receive, and from the city, the points that the city would be willing to give. We have added a couple of new indicators and removed some old ones, again, for those same purposes. One of the things that the Ferndale Food Bank might be happy with is we have now added a specific indicator for the Ferndale Food Bank, wherein a large retail development could do either a one-time or multi-year donation and work with the food bank to identify what the needs are, rather than just give the donation right around Thanksgiving. I guess unless there are any questions, the one thing that I know that the mayor wanted to mention, I don't know if you want to take it away or if you want me to intro it, the EAGLE catalog, which is not included here in the appendices. If you remember, the EAGLE catalog is a kind of a wish list that the city identifies that could have city-related projects, for instance, a new projector for the council chambers. But it could be other things that would help the community as well. The food bank's a good example. Other ones, Pioneer Park, if we have need for that, the Veterans Memorial, so on and so forth. The old log jam that has been recovered and funding for that. These are things where a retailer, be it large or small, or even a donor in the community who wants to know what the community wants, this is a roadmap for them to open that up. And if they have a spare couple $1,000s sitting around, they can see where they can put that money to the most use instead of scratching their head and thinking, well, gosh, you know, most cities probably would like to have more flower pots. Now we have a specific catalog that says, we actually want these flower pots, or we actually want these benches, or we actually want this community pool, or we want this or that or the other thing. So that's something that we can continue to work towards.
The point I guess he was going to point is talking to some retailers, they thought that was a pretty amazing thing that, well, if I put my store, say, on Slater, I can contribute to a project in downtown Ferndale. Well, that's a great thing. Cities don't typically do that. Rather than taking a store and say, okay, you have to put a park in your parking lot, no, we're going to have you put your funds somewhere else in the city. And the major retailers were pretty impressed by that, going, wow, that's a great thing your city's doing. And they look for those projects anyway. You know, certain large retailers want to continue the project. This gives them an it's kind of a win-win. So as we go to Eric, I don't want to cut time, and we usually let students go. Why don't we – how long do you think that will be?
Eric's pretty long-winded, but
– I'll ask your question. I'm not prepared to
Okay. Well,
let's shoot for it.
We're going to make them stay right at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
So why don't we bring Eric up, and then if we go past 8, I'll stop you. So we have a question from Councilor Zimmerman right now.
Yeah. Mr. Mayor, you might be able to answer this, maybe not. Let's say they want to donate something to the Veterans Memorial. Does, from a taxation aspect, because the Veterans Memorial is a 501c3, will they have the benefit of I'm wondering if they'll have the benefit of writing off it as a tax donation because of the way it's structured.
The answer would be yes.
So to be able to write off impacts, that's pretty powerful. Good job. Great.
Councilor Goodrich?
I really like this, some of the tweaks and things that I've been a proponent of the Eagle program, going back to my days on the Planning Commission. I don't have any questions, but I'd like to put forth a motion to accept Agenda Bill 1111-008.
I'll second it.
Moved and seconded. Councilor Malpezzi?
I'll agree with that. I'd like a lot of these. I did have a couple of questions why we're just blanketly removing a couple of them. Like, I'll just pick one, for example, recycled materials. It doesn't seem like it's redundant or being replaced anywhere. Just nobody builds with recyclable materials, or, how does it hurt to keep something like that in there as an option?
It's fair to be an open. I'm going to let either one of you that wants to jump forward and answer that at any time just move forward without recognizing it. Welcome again.
Well, being that there are some familiar faces around here, I'll answer that. We have indicators in several different areas, and I believe the one he's referring to is a redundant indicator. And I don't expect to know specifically what you're speaking towards, but if you could refer to the section, I could
sure.
Look it up for you.
It was page 9 of the Eagle.
We do have some redundancies where we saw parallels that those indicators could they could add points, but they were for different, a greater to good, and there's other indicators that it would add.
There's two page numbers on it. It's page 9 and page 98. And if it's caught somewhere else, that's a quick answer. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. The thought with that one in particular was that recycled materials, the use of them, it's a great thing, but it's not really an advanced technology, which is where it was found before. It's more of low impact, which is where it's found now on page 24/113.
Okay, any other questions for Eric Fiore? Eric, you're not going to buy that easy. Would you like to say something in intelligence?
Everybody looks great. I mean, it just looks good.
I got a nice broad.
Was that intelligent?
You're right. A good-looking audience.
Come on,
talk
about
it's
good to see everybody.
I'll throw an open-ended question out there. Would you classify these general changes as a tightening up of Eagle?
It's more of a refinement. It's not been tested. Everybody knows that we've been at this for a couple years now. We've been looking at it. We've been trying different types of projects that have yet to be tested by real people.
Can you give us a name of one of your mythical entities that
were tested?
Yeah, that were tested.
Pioneer Plaza was one that we.
No, your at. Mythical ones. Didn't you guys make some up?
Oh, no.
Trade secret.
They were not perfected projects.
I think it is significant. A lot of people don't understand. I mean, our ego and for the students, great name. Obviously, you should enjoy our name. Basically stands for something, but our planning director, who was a student just like you, went to Western and got a great education and came back, is the father of this, and he used this as his dissertation in college. So he's very proud of it, and he should be very proud of it. But what a lot of people never understood about LEEDs, Leadership in Energy Design, is that large retailers are very frustrated with that system, is that to get your building certified for LEEDs, it's very expensive. And you're paying a very expensive fee to do the things that we're allowing or we're requiring you to do for Eagle, and we don't have a charge for licensing. And so the major retailers we've talked to said, boy, way to go, Ferndale. We want to build for LEEDs because here's what one major retailer said. Your thing in terms of energy conservation, if you don't think
there that we're very serious about energy conservation in a large box store, you're crazy. It's our main focus. It's the main thing we talk about. But for leads, we're paying an enormously large check to do something that we want to do and that we should do for our bottom line. And so Eagle adds things that they're very pleased about, and they go, you know, we appreciate the fact that you're wanting us to build a great store that we don't have to just pay a check to some entity somewhere. And we did that same thing with Green Built with Residential. It's like, I want to do this, but why not have to pay the fee for you to look at my checklist that I'm already doing it? So great move.
You know, just to make a comment on top of that, Mayor, I've been approached by several large retailers, so staff, about the Eagle program. Everybody's a little bit nervous about it because they've never been through it. It's subjective. It's not held as a it's not a
proven.
Well, it's not proven, but it is subjective. So it's somewhat looked as a political. It can be a political tool, which we're trying to make it more objective, to where it's not a political tool. You know, you have Eagle board members that are part of the community, that are quote unquote professionals in their field. They're looking at those indicators, and they're making a judgment based off of a checklist coming forward. And those points that are presented can be subjective. And so the communication between the applicant and the city council, those who are, you know, to try to make this occur happen on a real project where millions of dollars are being spent, is not to be taken lightly.
Thank you for your service. Any other questions for the Eagle people?
Well, I'd like to make a follow-up statement following yours, Mr. Mayor. This is statements to all the high school people here. The man standing in front of you, Eric Whedon, another graduate of Ferndale High School, and is one of the very top wind power engineers in the world as far as siting and civil design. So a lot to be said for Ferndale graduates tonight.
And they both were in band.
Okay, any other questions for our Eagle? Okay, there's a motion before, and it's been seconded.
Yep.
Yeah, second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Good job. Okay, we'll take a 5-minute recess because the high school students really want to rush home and do more homework. The clown will sign your sheet. Mosey on
business.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Or a week. Rob. Vegas is one of the cheapest places.
What a rep.
John and Jack. They got cheap hotels and a lot of good stuff. So.
Okay, we're back in session 8:01:16. Okay, so next up is Mayor Reports. There's a little confusion on the workshop next Monday, so Yuri, you want to explain the reason why you called me to ask for this workshop?
Yes. Last week we went to Planning Commission for a workshop on the planned action with the intent of trying to give them as much information about what's a roundabout, what's the difference between roundabout and signal, what are our different options before they get to a public hearing. That way, they at least know the science behind them so they can make the pure policy decision. They have all the technical jargon in their heads. And they asked a lot of questions regarding how do we envision this roundabout strategy or the signal strategy, how do pedestrians interact, a lot of really good questions that I think council is probably going to want to hear too. And so rather than have Transpo come up and answer those questions to Planning Commission and for them to make a decision, then go to council and have the same questions, we felt that it was appropriate to have Transpo come up and listen to the same questions and give the same answers to both bodies, and to do so early enough in the process so if there is more information that's needed, we can get it to you folks in a timely manner.
Councilperson Liaison, do you want to comment?
Yeah, look, Yuri is exactly right. I think two other comments I want to make about it. One of them is this is one of those rare instances where I think council might be intellectually and emotionally ahead, further ahead in this process, because we've been dealing with this for a year, but commission hasn't. But there, it really should originate. A lot of these things would originate with the Planning Commission. Then it would come to Council, so the order's a little bit different there. The other reason is what I'm hearing from the Planning Commission, and they use, well, I think they use the, they tend to use the tree ordinance as sort of a code word for, you know what I'm talking about. They don't want to get really plugged into this thing because they know it's a massive amount of work. And then pick a direction and find out Council is not on board that direction. So I think doing this meeting, they're going to at least hear kind of our tenor of things too so they can go forward with their work.
I like the idea, just not wild about it being one of our off Mondays, you know, right now in this time. It's a busy time. I'd, you know, like to see it maybe. And the budget stuff really doesn't sound like we got a lot to continually go over, maybe in place of one of the budget meetings. We have a workshop, you know, on this. That'd be my suggestion, but
I think it was the Planning Commission had work to do, needed to move forward, and wanted to have a confirmation of our.
I'll tell you one more comment, and I think this would be a good meeting, whether it's next week or whenever. The Planning Commission, like us, really feels the weight of this thing. This is not like a three-block stretch of the city you're messing. This is the city. This is a big, permanent implications for decades kind of decision. And that you could see it as they're going, oh, my God. I mean, you felt that with them. And one of the comments they made, you know, and I had to defend Council, not a defensive posture, but they were wondering whether we took it seriously. And I said, trust me, we take it seriously. But I think that they could see us interact about it. They would understand that this is a very serious matter with us as well. I think that will put them on the right footing.
So it's next Monday at the Pizza Annex, a little closer for staff, and hopefully all of you.
Time?
Six.
And hopefully all you can make it.
Six, girl.
Yeah. So. Okay, next up, tomorrow night, the Nooksack Loop Trail is coming to Ferndale, 5 o'clock in our conference room. They meet regularly. They had their first open house where they went out to the community at Nooksack Valley Junior High School and showed their plan. Interesting because it's kind of like Mel was here and certain people were part of the Parks Board when we laid out our trail, and we remember how fun that was and how positive that was of going, here's our concept of a trail, and how some citizens reacted so positively of, oh, that's a trail going through my lawn or through my pond or
through my living room.
So this was a through my living room. This was a 52-mile trail through Whatcom County that they really, I don't know if I would have done it this way because I told them this is how we did it at Ferndale and it wasn't so positive, but here's the trail, and then it was like, well, wait a minute, that's my farm. You haven't talked to me. No, this is where we're showing its concept, so it wasn't one of the more positive meetings. But, so, they'll have results of that. You're all welcome. Our conference room, 5 o'clock tomorrow night at City Hall. So on Wednesday, the Chamber is having SSA Marine in. SSA Marine has some new information, some new drawings of what they're doing, a large letter and answer that you'll get to in terms of what they call the Whatcom Docks Statement.
I think those of us have already got that twice.
Have you already?
I've got it. I got it electronically, and I got it in the mail. So.
Okay. And all of you have gotten that? Because they wanted me to ask. Have all of you gotten SSA Marine's, it should have been the last week, I got it 2 weeks ago, their response to the Whatcom Docks? Okay, so.
They got it electronically, huh?
Okay.
Did we get it at their
Allah? No, this was a letter specifically for you gentlemen.
Oh, the doctors.
Yes.
Doctors.
Okay. Yeah, their response to the Whatcom Docks. Okay, we can get more information 12 o'clock at the Silver Reef. This week, the Chamber of Commerce.
It only costs you $12.
Costs you $12. Well, I think you can just go there and if you don't.
If you don't eat it, costs you nothing.
Yeah. Sneak in.
But if you're going to go, even eat or not, if you're going to go, call a guy and let him know because it makes a difference how they set
it. 12 o'clock
Wednesday.
Yeah.
Okay, and then Saturday the 22nd at Pioneer Park, 7 p.m. to midnight.
It's the first annual Fright Night fundraiser. They're hoping to raise funds to remodel a van into handicap access for a Ferndale citizen. It's $10. It's a costume party, and it's at Pioneer Park, 7 p.m. And then next week we have on the 31st we have that's 2 weeks right now. The downtown trick or treat. The Fright Night is an adult only situation. Okay, now someone asked about the land purchase for Vista and Washington. So we purchased that. A little bit of a struggle to get the key for it. And if you'll drive by and look at the open windows,
I got a key for it.
One of the former landowners and tenants who lived there for 22 years, and he had a 22-year accumulation of stuff. He got most of what his stuff was out. I have the key. We'll go inside tomorrow. Our objective is to find out how much stuff is left in there. Might be a scary situation.
You're going to go in there tomorrow? I would suggest Tyvek suits and breathing apparatuses.
Yeah. That cast.
Just from what I can see through the window.
Yeah. I'm a plumber, so I have pretty good immunity. But we'll take a look. Our objective is to figure out what we're going to do. My objective is to basically get someone to dismantle the house and take everything away and we can have an open lot. Councilor Zimmerman?
I would say on that, would it be something that the city would entertain just, hey, someone pick it up and move it? You think that's a possibility?
Yeah, it would be difficult to move because of the interior fireplace, and it has a full basement underneath.
Okay.
If someone maybe figured that out, I don't know.
Okay.
We'll kind of analyze.
I had two people ask me, and I said, well, I don't know. We're not that far.
Check with them on it. That thing's so fresh.
I think we'd be happy if somebody decided they could actually move that, get a professional mover and move it. I don't think we'd object to it at all.
Sometimes with the interior fireplace, that kind of changes things. But we'll see.
Yeah.
So we'll take a look at it tomorrow. And
what time, you say?
I don't know, whenever my schedule entertains them.
You see there.
With the key. We'll just do it in half an hour.
Power's still on.
You know, that I wouldn't be surprised if somebody would. I don't know if some of you folks have been around for the old church parsonage up where I'm at. We were going to fix it. It was really in bad shape. We said, we're just not going to mess with it anymore. And so I said, we'll take it. And you can find that, the old church parsonage at the corner of Malloy and Alder Grove, the northwest quarter there.
Is that right?
That's the old church parsonage. But they moved it. I was doggone. I was gone the day they moved it. I wanted to see that, but it was gone one day. So
the Corral House up at
Pacific
Islands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Pacific Islands.
It looks
good, too.
Fits right in that neighborhood. They did a nice job with that. Okay, that's it for mayor reports. Council reports. Now, you're going to tell us about there's a lot of shrimp served in this town. Is that what you're going to tell us about?
No, I wasn't going to tell you about that.
Customers in Ingram.
But I do thank everybody that showed up. And I'm disappointed that some of the other of our staff and council members didn't come out to support our local Dollars for Scholars. But I think there's somebody that has a presentation to give.
Oh, was I supposed to do that?
I thought you said you were going to make a big presentation.
Oh, I
have
a big presentation in this. And
you're a tough body.
I was so intelligent that they had this on the auction, so I bought the other one at the auction because I wanted to control the pictures of a local artist. This is the Riverwalk, and the amazing thing is that she decided to pick some unbelievably good subjects for her painting. And I like the fact that she made me considerably skinnier.
That's the dog.
My wife thought she was skinnier. And then she got the first dog in there, which is more important. So. I think she has more copies if you'd really like, in your house, a copy of the first dog. Come to my house.
First dog.
It was a very nice presentation.
What's your dog's name again?
Blue. Okay, any other council reports? Is somebody going to talk about shrimp or what? Councilperson Nansen.
No, I was going to talk about shrimp. I was going to talk about your forestry commission has a work party Saturday to plant about 7 or 8 cedar trees.
Ah.
Three or four small ones, then definitely 3 10 to 12 footers. The reason that they're doing it in the fall is the trees transplant better in the fall. And by spring, they should be full
of them. Saturday, 9 a.m. Pioneer Park.
9 a.m. Pioneer Park.
today I attended the Whatcom Food Network. It's quite an interactive, cross-disciplinary group of people in at the Squalicum Boathouse. And they had a speaker there, Dr. Oren Hesterman. He's speaking tonight at the Village Books, but fair food. And it was really amazing when I asked our Chamber of Commerce representative about agrotourism. This is a really big part of it. And if we're really going to do some nice things that support local jobs and tax base and just part of the whole wonderfulness of living in the Northwest, we can just grow about anything. It's going to be part of it. It's also part of the social network of supplying food banks and jobs and just the quality of foods, working it into the school systems, and really recreating an economic model that's sustainable. So it's pretty interesting. And I'll keep you posted on it. A group of people keep plugging away.
I have a question. I guess I have to ask you. We gave the permission. We signed the whole lease for the ballot box so people could drop off their ballots in the City Hall parking lot. But ballots were mailed. They're kind of slow on installing that.
Ballots go out Friday.
Yeah, so Thursday, when are they going to install that thing? It was a whole big deal. Signing the lease so they could put a ballot box. Weird. Not very efficient.
It might be even day of. I don't really know.
It's the ballot box itself is a day of ballot box.
Yeah.
It's right. Election day only. Only one that's all the time is the one at the Whatcom County
Courthouse. No, but they had the whole lease that they basically, okay, we have to sign this lease so we can put a ballot box. It's only temporary. It's installed in City Hall.
In the City Hall.
In the parking lot. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
You think it'd be.
But it's only for day of election.
So I guess.
There are seven locations around the county on election day only.
So I guess they have lots of time. All right.
Yep. 3 weeks.
Councilperson Ingram.
Well, okay. Just so you know.
Yes.
Those that were there consumed just under 410 pounds of shrimp.
Where's there? When was there?
You weren't paying attention, were you? It's been all over the newspaper.
Dollars
for Scholars' annual shrimp feed. Saturday night at the Senior Center. And it was we set up for 110 people. By my just cruising around while people were eating, I think I saw 8 empty chairs.
So like 4 pounds of shrimp per person?
Yeah, about 4 pounds of shrimp per person. If you went away hungry, it was your own darn fault.
That Seinfeld episode, you know, George, the ocean called, there were no shrimp. Any other counselor?
Don't quit your day job.
Probably good. I had the pleasure of judging the Harvest Festival bake contest. It was a really tough job.
One pie.
We have some unbelievable cupcake makers, and our own Ann Klein, the insurance agent, had the very best apple pie that I might have ever tasted. So.
Well, she's from that part of the country, Okanagan, so.
Mm-hmm.
It was a tough job. Okay, staff report. City administrator.
Nothing.
Community development director.
Nothing.
Ooh, good job. You're doing a much better job than your predecessor on that.
I've learned from the Whippings.
Our finance director.
Nothing.
Our police chief is not going to have a comment. Our clerk?
Go Seahawks.
That's okay. The report.
Public works director. Okay, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.